I trade freight services in association with Who1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Dr. Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Dr. Who podcast number 196. And beginning the show this week, we have Mr. Ben Shoveler.
I feel privileged.
Do you? Why?
I haven't started the show with you for ages.
True. But it had to happen.
Well, it happened many times a long, long time ago. Before there was a confusing amount of doctors.
Yeah.
Well, no, before there was a confusing amount of doctors. Well, yes, that's very true, actually. Yeah,
it's. Took a sip out of my tea and tipped it all over my keyboard. Oh, for goodness sake.
Oh, did you? That was a bit silly.
It was a bit silly, and I'm trying to wipe off my keyboard now and hope it doesn't affect my eject button, which is what it landed on. Right, okay.
Well, I'm trying to get Monty Python tickets as we talk, so, yeah, if I succeed and get my Monty Python tickets, then I'll be very happy, because I missed out earlier, and that annoyed me immensely, because I haven't had a lot of sleep. Because, like yourself, I had a poorly child over the weekend.
Well, I had the same problem getting tickets for the Doctor Who celebration, of course, which is the main subject of the last episode of this podcast. Very frustrated not to get the TARDIS ones, but when I saw the queue for TARDIS tickets actually at the event, there was hardly anybody that was there, you know, so it was a very small amount of people that were entitled to these tickets who actually got them. So it would have been nice to have
them. But was it good?
It was superb. If you listen, I would advise you as well to listen to 195, the 20 megabyte podcast, not only because it's an all-star podcast, I've got so many people on it, famous people, that is, some interviewed by me, mostly not, but simply because I know your nemesis, Stephen Moffat.
Hello?
is on it.
You know this program we're talking about, Dick Tehoy?
Yes, I did leave my mouth behind.
With Stephen Moffat.
But yeah, yes. So he is on the show and articulates himself.
Stephen Moffat is?
Yeah. Well, not interviewed by me, fortunately.
Stephen Moffat is on...
He is, but he's interviewed by Nicholas Briggs, but I brought my audio recording device with me and recorded a very interesting conversation. So if you've missed the last episode, go back and listen to it, because Stephen Moffat articulates himself in a particularly good way and explains himself brilliantly. And yes, he's probably...
I doubt that.
Still. I think if you listen to the episode, you'll...
A little bit.
Even though he's very low down in estimations, is that the word?
You're doing well today, Adam. You're doing well.
I did. I left my mouth in Watford. Yeah, he's probably gone up by like 0 to 1, or maybe half a point. I don't know, but it's enough that it's worthwhile listening to. I say.
Well, I'll tell you one thing.
Yes.
As you may have seen me posting on your, not yours, because you don't own Facebook. But on the Facebook 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast page, of which, by the way, I got one of my friends to join the other day because he's a big Doctor Who fan.
Good lad.
Yeah, you may have seen that I was rather impressed by the 20th anniversary episode.
Which segues us nicely into how did you celebrate the day?
Well, what I did, as I said, I had a rather poorly little 7-year-old, as yourself, and... So I celebrated the day by wearing my Fifth Doctor T-shirt and putting my cardboard cutout Dalek up in the window of my bedroom, which looks out onto the road in front. So everyone who drove past my house would have seen my cardboard cutout Doctor Who Dalek. Doctor Who? I'm doing a U. Doctor Who Dalek sat in my window all day, which then the wife took down when I was out watching the special. So, but yes, that's how I celebrated. And then I watched it. And then I watched it again. And then I started trying to watch that Zoe Ball thing afterwards. But I hate Zoe Ball even more than I hate Stephen Moffat.
I haven't seen it. Don't spoil it for me.
Well, Zoe Ball's blooming awful.
Okay, thank you for that. But yeah, don't spoil it, because I haven't had time.
Oh, God,
I've only seen it once, you know. I've only seen it once, the episode. I do intend to see it again before tomorrow's recording session with the other reprobates. Obviously, we saw it at the XL, and what a great place to see it. But I'll talk about that later on in the episode. I did interrupt you. I didn't mean to. Please carry on.
Why are you recording with everyone else tomorrow? I mean, I'm normally last on the list. Well, no, mate, let's be honest. I'm not last on the list. I'm not last on the podcast. Normally first on the list, but never available.
Simply for time constraints, because obviously I have to allocate about 2 hours recording with that lot. With you, I somehow think we might be able to get through the thing a little bit quicker. And I've got so much to do today in regards to uploading photos to Facebook for editing episode 195. But by the time people are listening to this one, it's already out. And things like that, really. So and I've got to tidy the house up and put stuff away. And
hold on, I'm well confused.
Yeah.
This is more confusing than the numbering of the doctors now. What number podcast is this?
195.
And which Six. One are you...
No, sorry. I'm confused. 196.
Yes, so you're doing 100... What?
Right, I've already recorded
this
195.
This is 195.
No, this is 196. I'm getting confused, right? This is 196. I haven't edited 195 yet.
What 195 was from the weekend, was it?
195 is the 50th anniversary actual episode from the XL. It's basically around that.
That you did up there by yourself with everyone else who was there?
Yes. Which features, like I say, five doctors, a Clara, a Moffat, and a Lizo, what's his that chap with the glasses that used to do
Mazumbai.
Lizo Mazumba.
Mazumba.
He did it very kindly. Yeah, did an interview with me. Very nice man. And what I forgot to do was when I bumped into John Culshaw, I forgot to think, I'll record this, because he was talking to me in a John Pertwee voice. And what a brilliant thing that would have been to have actually recorded. What a twit!
Yes.
Yes.
I can't believe you didn't do that.
And because Isabella wanted to go around looking at all the exhibits, because she was going to be bored and grumpy, Deb wanted to go and have a picture taken That's with building. Graham Norton, because Graham Norton was doing his radio show from the event that
He morning. Was. I was listening to that, hoping you'd pop up on it.
I wanted to go up and have a picture taken with him, or Deb did at least, and he was having picture taken with people in between records and stuff like that, but didn't happen because Isabella was getting grumpy, and she was getting fed up with queuing as well. But we, as I say, we did meet a few sort of celebrities from John Culshaw. He was funny. And like I say, Lizo Mazumba. Is that right?
Lizo Mazumba.
Yeah, I think that's his name. Lizo Mazumbo. Yeah, he's He used to be on Newsround.
He did. And he's then now he a roving doing BBC reporter.
He now does big boy news instead of baby news.
He does, indeed. But a very nice chap.
Anyway.
Agreed to do
enough of Lizo Mazumba. I'm going to give up trying to buy Monty Python tickets because I'm just not getting anywhere and it's getting me annoyed.
Okay.
Which is very frustrating. But anyway, so, yeah.
Yeah, where do we get up to with your day?
Oh, yeah, well, that's basically what it is. Yeah, so my little seven-year-old was poorly, and, you know, it's one of those things, because I only get her every other weekend, right? And so, obviously, putting her to bed every other Friday and Saturday night is quite a special thing for me, because it's the only time I get to do it, obviously, in a fortnight. Yeah. And on Saturday afternoon, she'd been poorly since she turned up on Friday night. And Saturday afternoon, about 4:45, as we were watching Return of the Jedi, she fell asleep. And I thought, well, I don't want to let her sleep for too long, because if I let her sleep for too long now, when it comes to the evening, she won't want to go to sleep. And my plan was that I was going to put her to bed at about 7:20, sit with her for about 20 minutes until she fell asleep, throw me shoes and coat on and nip down the road to me mates, leaving the wife here looking after her when she's asleep. But unfortunately, I put her to bed at 7:20, and as she'd had a sleep in the afternoon, she wouldn't sleep for love nor money at that time, so I sat with her for about 10 minutes, and it got to about 25 to 8, and I thought, what do I do now? So I said to her, do you want to get back up again and go and sit downstairs with Rachie? And she was like, yeah. So I left her sitting on the sofa and went out to watch it with my friend, who... He's quite a big Doctor Who fan. Well, no, he enjoys watching it. I wouldn't say he's a big Doctor Who fan. And he was most confused at the end of the episode, let's put it that way. You might need to lose a bit of weight. I need to use a lot of weight. The wife said to me last night, I was looking at a photo of you and me the day that our eldest daughter was born, who's now 13 and a half. And she said, you were thin and quite attractive back then. I thought, thank you very much, my darling. I shall just regenerate, shall I?
Well, it's funny that when you should say that my BitPix avatar, somebody said that avatar's not very accurate because it's quite good looking.
And thin.
That too.
I'm not getting involved in those avatar things. That is, no, just no. Just no. not getting interested. Not involved. Don't care. Not even with a Doctor Who scarf on am I going to get involved in that. So, but yes, that's what I did. And so I watched it around my friend's house and then I came home. And, yes, I was of a good opinion of the episode, if we're being honest. I rather enjoyed it.
I'm glad to hear that. I thought myself when watching it, Ben won't like that. I'm just trying to remember, having only seen it once, which bits I thought, Ben won't like that. I thought of one straight away.
Go on then, see if you can work out. Because all in all, I did like it, but there were some bits in it that I just thought,
I might not do this in the right order.
Okay.
And also, apologies to listeners who haven't seen it yet, which if you haven't seen it, you shouldn't really be listening to this.
No, I was going to say that. If you haven't seen it yet, first 3 days on, because we're now Monday, so it's only 2 days on. Well added up, Ben. But then again, I'm not the only one with number issues. Stephen Moffat. So
that's the first one. That now we do indeed, it is confirmed that John Hurt is the Ninth Doctor.
Yeah. Go on then. So that what annoys me about that?
Because you were saying previously that that's messed up all the numberings and everything, and also the fact we had a great big banner at the celebration which had the 12 doctors, or 11 in fact.
See, I don't care about them. I think them.
Sorry,
bless you. The numbers should change. I don't, you know, that doesn't bother me at all. They have to change. What will annoy me more is this insistence by Stephen Moffat that the numbers go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. What?
No, they don't now, though, do they? He now becomes the Ninth Doctor.
Well, no, because he's still saying that the numbers don't change. Because,
well, he can shut up.
Quite frankly. Bobby's been saying that for the last four years.
He's admitted to it on my show last week, and in front of a few thousand Doctor Who fans. He lies. He has to lie.
He does lie.
Because he doesn't want to spoil things. What annoys him the most, and I'm going to be brief because he does explain it a bit longer, what annoys him the most is people that are hell-bent on spoiling what's the surprises that are coming up in Doctor Who.
And nobody wants that because, you know, obviously that makes the episode a little bit more magical.
Therefore, he lies and he has admitted to it. So basically, there's no point asking him any questions in regards to what's coming up in Doctor Who, whether people are going to be in it or not in it or whatever, because he will lie to protect the secrets.
Innocent. My good old mum, always says to me, if you've got nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all and don't lie. So, therefore, Stephen Moffat should just not give interviews. If he's going to sit there and just lie, what's the point in giving an interview if
that's
another
good
point. Lying?
But back to what you didn't like about the thing.
Yes.
And my guessing of such.
Go on then.
We've already done that. The other thing was when John Hurt sort of wandered into the TARDIS at the end and said, this whole body's wearing a bit thin, and then started regenerating, and we didn't see the culmination of that regeneration. Rather like we didn't see the culmination of River Song's, well, when she was a child, regenerating into the Mel's version of Melody Pond.
See, the thing that annoys me about that, because that I did love seeing the John Hurt beginning of the regeneration. It would have been so easy just to, you know, CGI a face of Christopher Eccleston. For heaven's sake, they've got him regenerating out of his body. They could quite easily have used that footage to see him regenerate into the body of Christopher Eccleston.
I saw a bit of three more seconds
of that, and that would have made me very happy.
I thought I saw a bit of a morphing. Eyes started to go Eccleston-y, but they didn't.
Yes, they did. Yeah, it did. But as I say, three more seconds of that, and I would have been the happiest bunny in bunny land. Because, you know, the reason I want this, and I'll just explain this. Now, look, obviously, to most Doctor Who fans, hardcore fans, the regenerations are a big thing, yeah?
Yes,
agreed?
They are indeed,
right.
Yes.
And so when, you know, the internet first came about 10, 15 years ago, whenever it was, one of the first things that I certainly looked at myself on the YouTube-type sites was, you know, the compilations of all the Doctors regenerating, yeah? From 1 to 2 to 2 to 3 to 3 to 4, etc., 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 etc. So, you know, we've been fed this new story that there's a new Doctor. We're obviously missed out on the regeneration of McGann into whoever followed McGann, as we now know it was Hurt. And then from that Doctor into Eccleston. We've missed out on two regenerations. Now, in the last week, we've seen half of both of them. Why didn't they, you know... As I said, even with the John Hurt one in the Night of the Doctor, or whatever it was called, the little mini one, they could have done that better. As I said last week, it wouldn't have taken that much more to give you two or three more seconds of the regeneration and the glimpses of John Hurt's younger face turning up. Because obviously, you know, as the story is, apparently John Hurt was that Doctor for a very long time.
Yeah, a very long time, yes.
And, you know, same as McGann into... You could have seen a little bit more of both of those regenerations, and I think that would have made it happy. Cause, well, it made me happy and probably made a lot of fans happy. Because I say, if you have a look now through those the videos of all the regenerations put together, then, you know, you have to effectively cut away from those two 5 seconds earlier than you get to see all the rest of them. And that just doesn't sit right with me. There's no point in that. With the technology around these days, and I can guarantee you I'm not the only one sitting here saying this, I am sitting here saying this at the moment. There's no one else here. But, you know, I'm not the only person thinking this in the Doctor Whoniverse. I just think, you know, a little bit, couple more extra seconds, and you'd have made a lot of people a lot more happier. And that's what she said. I thank you very much. I haven't got one of them in for a while.
Right, that's what she said.
That's what she said. Anyway. So yeah, that did annoy me. But obviously it was, you know, it was good to see that the starts of it, but a couple more seconds, all I ask for.
That's the thing that really sort of stuck out in my mind that might annoy you. And the bit at the end with Tom Baker, I thought that might annoy you simply because it's Tom Baker and it implies that there's been another instance where the Doctor's sort of been meta-crisis and turned into a human version of himself.
Well, no, because Tom Baker said that he said you revisit some of your favourite faces, or a line similar to that, didn't he? He said, what was the exact line? He said something along the lines of you go back and revisit some of your old faces, the favourite ones only, though, or something like that. And so that's another version of the Doctor after the Doctor's retired. He's regened into that face because he liked it, and now he's the curator in my mind. So I loved that bit. I nearly cried when Tom Baker came on screen.
Oh, you should have heard the reaction in the audience, which I was recording at one point. Then I turned the thing off. And I thought, maybe I shouldn't record this. And I thought, well, afterwards, when I decided not to record it, I should have recorded this, edited out all the sort of copyrighted stuff, and just kept the reactions to certain things. And
I sat there and I went, ah! You know, I didn't know. It was a real one-direction reactions.
Obviously, it was a few laughter bits. The big cheers, that got a big cheer and a very long one. The eyes of Capaldi got a big cheer. And,
that got me as well, to be honest. I was like, ah! So, yeah, that was great. I mean, there wasn't many things I didn't like about it. The main thing I didn't like about it was, I did like the story, but I just think it was... this whole new Doctor thing, I do like it. I do where it sits in, but I just think, you know, you can't sit there and say he's not a Doctor. You can't say he's a war Doctor. You know, at the end of the day, look, I read something very interesting last night on the Digital Spy Doctor Who forums, and people talking about the numbering of the Doctors. And Stephen Moffat's come out this morning and said it's not important. You know, the numbers of the Doctor. The Doctor doesn't call himself the 11th Doctor or the 10th Doctor. He can't remember. He's got no idea which number he is, apparently, according to Stephen Moffat, even though he does remember things from old lives, so therefore he must remember some bits, but anyway. Moffat's saying the numbering doesn't matter, but it kind of does. I mean, in the timeline, in the chronological timeline of things, it does matter.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. Here we go. I've got it loaded up here. This is what Stephen Moffat has said today. Well, this is the actual... I'll just read you the article briefly. Stephen Moffat has discussed the Doctor's regeneration limit following the events of the 50th anniversary special. The showrunner said that John Hurt's version of the Time Lord does not alter the numbering of other incarnations. Speaking at the Doctor Who 50th celebration at London XL, I know someone who was there.
Yeah, Moffat said... didn't know it on what day I was there.
Moffat said he has no more ever called himself the 11th Doctor then he would call himself Matt Smith. The Doctor doesn't know off the top of his head what number he is. If you worry about such things, and I do, he says, then I specifically, not me, this was him, then I specifically said John Hurt's Doctor doesn't use the title Matt Smith's Doctor in his 12th body, but he is the 11th Doctor. However, there is no such character as the 11th Doctor. He's just the Doctor. That's what he calls himself. The numbering doesn't matter, except for those lists that you and I have been making for many years. So I've given you the option of not counting John Hurt numerically. He's the War Doctor. blobbity blobs. Just then he goes on to say, Moffat also responded to questions about the Doctor's regeneration limit, which was introduced in the Tom Baker story, The Deadly Assassin. Paul McGann turns into John Hart, so they're not the same incarnation. He used John up Hart. Another... Did I say Joe Hart?
No, you John said John Hart.
Did I? John Hurt.
I bet that did.
Yeah. Ooh, that's what she said. So they're not... Paul McGann turns into John Hurt, which didn't hurt. Well, apparently it did. So they're not the same incarnation. He used up another regeneration, and I expect he'll be in trouble shortly. You can't break the rules laid down in The Deadly Assassin. Assassin, he teased. So basically that absolutely answers absolutely nothing, to be completely honest, is it? Because he says one thing, then he contradicts himself. And but, yeah, look, at the end of the day, as I was saying last week, Hurt followed number 8, number 9.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry?
You said Hurt followed and I inserted a stab in the foot, but that was a very random thing to say. But
I see what you're doing there. You're trying to be funny.
No, I am succeeding.
No, you're not.
The laughter resonating around the Doctor Who universe. Not
right. Hold on, let me just put the microphone out the window.
That's because they stopped laughing now.
Stopped. Anyway.
A little titter.
So, yeah. So, you know, 8 followed, 9 followed, 10 followed. So he's in there. He's got to be in there because he's a proper doctor. We've seen him on screen. He admits he was a doctor and he was the doctor. So therefore, he's got to be in there. Now, talking about everyone's numbering changes, well, it should do, unless you want to be ultra clever and actually stick John Hurt in as the 12th doctor, because that's obviously the order that we've seen them. So you could do that. You know, you could keep him up to 11, Matt Smith 11, John Hurt 12, and Capaldi 13. Mm. I've got no issue with that, to be honest. I think that works quite well. Apart from it obviously doesn't fit chronologically his timeline. But when do we ever see the Doctor in his timeline? You know, he's in a proper timeline. You don't. I mean, look at the recent series. I mean, look at the events of Saturday. It started months after the end of the name of the Doctor, when he was stuck in his own time stream. How did he get out of that? Why was there no mention of how he got out of his time stream? I think that's quite an important thing, surely.
I don't know. But I mean, it's like this thing, I'm going to forget this, aren't I? I quite like that. Because then at least that explains why the Doctor doesn't entirely remember his previous meetings with himself, so as he can remember what happened and stop it from happening, etc., etc.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, that bit, the bit where they were, where all three of them were in the art gallery or whatever it was at the end of it, and they did, I'm not going to remember this bit. I thought that bit, the actual whole of that story bit, was absolute genius. I mean, it's the only time I'm ever going to say this about anything Stephen Moffat has ever done, because the bloke's an idiot. But the story was absolute genius. He's basically performed a complete reset of everything we knew, but at the same time, changed nothing. I mean, that in itself is absolute genius to think of that idea.
So how do you feel about the fact that obviously the Gallifrey isn't actually there, but the Doctor's got to find it, but it is now sort of undestroyed, if you like.
Well, I mean, I think that's really good. I think that's a brilliant twist for the programme. You know, you've now got however many years it takes the Doctor to try and find Gallifrey again. How he's going to unfreeze it from time without his other 12 Doctors, I've got absolutely no idea. I don't know if Moffat's thought that far ahead, but if it takes 13 TARDISes... surely that should be TARDI. takes 13 TARDI to freeze or, you know, suspend Gallifrey... Then how does it only take one, possibly, I'm guessing on that point, obviously, to unfreeze it and to bring it back? But I think that's brilliant. I mean, it's a great new direction the show's got to go in. Mm. And a lot of people are saying, oh, it's given the show a future. It always had a future. Mm. There was no, it wasn't going to stop. The only thing that could possibly stop it is this regeneration limit, which they'll work their way around somewhere or the other. Because at the end of the day, Doctor Who's, you know, in the top 4 biggest earning programs of the BBC in the world. Yeah. It pays for itself many times round. Yeah. And they're not going to stop it because it's run out of regenerations. They'll clearly think of something to do.
Which but got no, me thinking I, about this, so the Doctor Who celebration that obviously I went to and a few others over the weekend. The previous year we had the official Doctor Who, BBC Doctor Who convention in Cardiff. There was a bit of moaning from myself about some of the lack of communication in the organisation of the event, but I have to say, they really, having been to it, the BBC did it amazingly. And I think that if they were to continue to do events like this, which must be good and money earning for the corporation, that I'd be inclined to want to go to them.
Well, it makes, so BBC makes the corporation millions and millions of pounds. And
I mean, Doctor Who.
What did I say?
You said the BBC makes the corporation. Which
oh, sorry.
Is
yes, Doctor Who makes the corporation millions and millions of pounds. Yes, there you go. There's an easy edit for you. Yes, and, you know, I think what Moffat's done there is very good. I absolutely, as I say, loved the bit with Tom Baker the final few minutes where Matt Smith was walking around going, you know, Clara always asked me what I'm going to do, where I'm going to go, you know, that kind of bit. And then as he walked out and there was all 12 of them standing there, wasn't it? And, you know, that was just great. I didn't think Peter Davison looked much like Peter Davison from the back, though.
No, it's a bit too blonde, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, and it wasn't. It was the wrong shape for his head as well. But you know, that's getting majorly picky, isn't it? But I thought, the ending was great. One of the things I was slightly disappointed about, if we're being honest, is the way that Rose was used.
Yeah,
I really liked the idea again. You know, I liked the idea of having this Christmas Carol type person. You know, showing the ninth, eighth and a half war sponge making doctor, you know, showing him the past, present and the future effectively. I thought that worked brilliantly. I'd say a little bit disappointed that they didn't use Rose more. I don't understand why they couldn't have just, you know, gone to a period of time of David Tennant's tenure where Rose was incumbent in the TARDIS. That could have explained it easily. They've clearly gone back to his own timeline. Why couldn't they have just gone back to a point where Rose was a proper companion and she could have had a bigger part in it? Because it wasn't Rose, was it? It was the time. It was the Bad Wolf. And so therefore, yeah. I mean, how did that work as well? That didn't, you know, get explained how Rose, the Bad Wolf, who scatters herself through time and space at the end of
my wife
Christopher Eccleston's reign.
Go on, my wife worked out how Bad Wolf got involved in it. Because of the way Billy Piper was playing the part, that it was in fact the TARDIS, because it was very similar to Sir Anne Jones's portrayal of the TARDIS in The Doctor's Wife. The way she was speaking, everything, and of course where Rose took in the time vortex became Bad Wolf Rose. Then the TARDIS was creating itself in the form of Rose, so basically it was a psychic projection of the TARDIS that the Doctor was seeing.
Yeah, that could work, but as I say, I'm still disappointed that they didn't use Billy Piper a little bit more, the character of Rose better. I think they could have, you know, for someone who's been such an iconic part of the series since it rebooted, I really think they could have done that better. But as I say, I did enjoy her being in it. I think what she did very well, and it worked very well in the storyline. I just think you could have used a random character for the Christmas Carol type character, and Rose could have been in it properly. But, you know, ho-hum, these are small little irritations which don't really matter, do they?
So, on the whole, then, Moffat done good on this particular occasion?
Yeah, I think he did. I hope you're not recording that, but yeah, I think he did. I was really pleased with it. I was enchanted for a good hour and 15 minutes. I've watched it twice again since. And it just gets better every time you watch it, really.
Somebody said that they didn't like it, but they were drunk when they first watched it and hated it, and watched it since and liked it a lot better. Well, you would do, wouldn't you, really?
Well, I mean, the bloke I watched it with, my mate who I watched it with, I said at the end of it, he was very like, what is all that about? What's, you know, how are they not going to remember, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I explained it to him, basically, as I explained it to you a couple of minutes ago. It's, he's changed everything but changed nothing. So, yeah. You know, I don't think that's very clever what he's done. And then the way it was done as well was very good. I mean, I did love the story about how, you know, you had to go back to the 1500s to enter the paintings to then come out in 2013. That was a very clever little twist to the story. Which
yeah, I'd like to have seen that in 3D.
Well, I'd have liked to see the whole thing in 3D, to be honest. Yeah. I was thinking about going to the cinema because it was on. They had the screening, obviously, at 7:50, but there was one at 9:30 as well. And I got home from my friend's house at that point. The little one was asleep. My wife was watching Strictly or something. And I just thought, I might just nip down the cinema. It's only half a mile away and can't spend £15 to watch it again in 3D. And to be honest with you, because I'm shy of work at the moment, I've been looking at my local cinemas to see if it's on in the week, and it's not on.
No, it was on Sunday morning.
Yeah, it was on Sunday afternoon in a couple of places, but, you know, they could have put it on anymore. Once or twice during the day. That would be quite nice. I could have gone and seen it in 3D then, but... Alas, not. But what other bits did I really like about it? Well, most of it, to be honest. There were several things. Ah, now this is the point that I wanted to ask. And responses, please, on the Facebook page to this conundrum. Once I've worked out how to put it to you. Mm-hmm. Right, that's it. So. The Doctor, we better give him numbers, otherwise this might get a little bit confusing. John Hurt's Doctor always thought he ended the Time War. He regenerated into Christopher Eccleston thinking that he had ended the Time War. Christopher Eccleston's Doctor thought that he ended the Time War and was very like, oh, woe is me, I've killed everybody. I'm running around, I'm the only Time Lord left. I'm running around this big galaxy or universe by myself. I'm the last of the Time Lords. I've got no friends, no one, blah, 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 blah. But obviously now it turns out that he didn't end the Time War, but very cleverly, because he was out of his own time stream, he doesn't remember not ending the Time War. So the Doctor still thinks he ends the Time War, yeah?
Yes.
Okay. So who else knows that the Doctor was responsible for ending the Time War?
Clara.
And how do they know?
Because they were there.
Who?
Clara.
Clara wasn't there because he didn't end the Time War.
No, not what I'm saying is Clara was there with the three Doctors.
How does she remember?
Well, they didn't say she didn't. She wouldn't remember. And apart from the fact that all the Claras have interacted with all the Doctors somewhere in time, haven't they?
Right. But taking into account that none of the Doctors remember... So nobody else was there bar Clara and the original time round, the first time round... Because, well, unless this was the first time round, effectively, and this always happened, it's just that the Doctor didn't remember it. But even if that's the case, who said that the Doctor ended the Time War? Because a lot of people in Doctor Who stories over the last 7-8 years, a lot of people, including the Dalek Emperor at the end of the first series, you know, makes reference to the Doctor ending the Time War. Mm. My question is, how did they know? If he was the only person there, and he ended the Time War by pressing the big red button, which I did love the big red button jokes in there as well. I thought that was very good. Mm-hmm. If he was the only person there, or even three incarnations of himself being there, and maybe Clara, who else knew? My question, therefore, is, how does everyone know that the Doctor ended the Time War if he was the only person there? Unless he's gone round bragging to the whole universe about him ending the Time War. It doesn't make any sense any other way. Nobody else knew. Nobody else was aware. The only people who would have, you know, the Time Lords and the Daleks both were worried about him doing it by the sounds of what was going on in the High Council and all that kind of stuff. But they're all dead. Or supposedly dead.
Mm.
So the only people who were there when he pressed the button, if he pressed the button first time round, or will pretend he now didn't, will say... Because I think what probably happened is this happened all the time, obviously, but the Doctor didn't know it happened until he regenerates into Matt Smith and has his penultimate adventure like he did on Saturday. So nobody else knew that he ended the Time War, or didn't end the Time War as it was. So how did everyone find out that the Doctor ended the Time War? Because no one was there, so he must have told everybody. So basically, the Doctor is just a big blabbermouth and show-off. Because he's going around the whole universe telling everyone, I ended the Time War, because no one else could have known about it.
Okay.
No, come on, response.
Yeah, it's told quite a lot of people, though, in that time. Yes, okay. That's a bit too complicated for me.
Why did the Dalek Emperor, at the end of the Eccleston first episode... not first episode, the end of Eccleston's series, you know, where he's talking to the Dalek Emperor and he's like, you killed everyone, that makes you as bad as me.
Right.
Why did he still think that the Doctor killed everyone in the Time War?
Good point. haven't really thought of it, but that was RTD wrote all that stuff.
These are the things that don't, you know, the only things that from the story that doesn't make sense to me. The fact that no one else knew, so therefore the Doctor's told everyone, and then the Dalek Emperor still thinks that the Doctor ended the Time War, even though he didn't, just because Gallifrey moved. And, you know, what about all these billion Daleks? Yeah, all right, they all killed each other in their crossfire instantly. Really? That there was none that escaped. There was none that sent a message out saying, Gallifrey, the planet has just disappeared. Not sure where it's gone. Check the sat nav. Not there anymore. You know, I'm sorry. You cannot, as much as you try and suspend belief, if there's a billion of anything, then they're not all going to die instantly unless Rose Tyler separates every atom of their beings at the end of Bad. So there were little plot holes there that did make it a little bit. No, come on, Moffat, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But it's just like he gets so excited about things, doesn't he? He does kind of like sit there and bask in his own self glory a lot of the time.
He does a bit, but I have to say he's clearly, this is the job for him.
Oh God, no! I can't wait till he leaves.
But he just
Mark Gatiss in. That's when he'll be the next showrunner. I'll give you that on a plate now. Mark Gatiss will be the next showrunner when Stephen Moffat leaves, which I predict will be at the end of this series. By the way, he'll do series 8 and then he'll leave. Okay. There's that. And the other thing that I liked was the fact that, you know, he did revisit a couple of old Doctor phrases. You know,
yes.
The old, you know, as we saw in the trailers, you've redecorated. Oh, I don't like it. But I think maybe as he has basically rewritten everything that Russell T. Davies had brought the show back with, I think maybe the old Doctor Who line that he should have maybe had a look at was, do I have the right?
Ah, yes, indeed. Good one.
Thank you very much. I've been thinking about that 2 days. Yeah, so, you know, that's, I did like it, but I'm still not a massive, I'm still not a Moffat fan at all. I think a lot of his stuff is complete guff. I think his stories are way too confusing, and he does it to please himself, not the fans, and that's not the right way to get people on board.
Most of the time, but on this occasion, he's done it about right.
You think?
Yeah,
I think. Oh, go on, then explain the questions that I've just asked you then about the time.
But before that, you were saying this is really good, but now he's really confused me. There's always questions in Doctor Who. I can't explain them.
Well, of course there isn't.
Not without thinking on them for a little while, to be honest.
And I am contradicting myself slightly, but I did really enjoy the episode. I really enjoyed watching it. I've enjoyed watching it twice more since then. And as I've got the day off again today, because I have every day off, I will more than likely, as the cricket's finished, I'll more than likely watch it again this afternoon. Because, you know, it's just one of those things I just want to watch loads at the moment, even though I know exactly what's going to happen and I'm pretty good at recanting the script word for word already. I'll watch it again because it's a really good bit of Saturday night. Well, not just Saturday night, it's a really good film. And if it wasn't for the slightly confusing bits in it, which no one seems to be able to answer, let alone Moffat, then it was really enjoyable, really good. And, a very good episode to celebrate the 50th. And hey, the great news is, we've only got exactly 1 month to wait until we get another new episode of Doctor Who.
Another very moving one. Now, talk about moving bits. Obviously, when I watched it, the thing we had the Sontarans doing "You must not eat popcorn loudly" sort of
announcements
and stuff like that. But and then of course that stops, and we get the opening title sequence, reminiscent of
one.
The Hartnell era.
Oh well, that right at the beginning actually was
which was lovely.
Yeah, well, I did say to my mate before it started, I said, I bet they're going to start with the very first opening.
Mm.
And I was right about that.
I'm so glad they did. But I mean, so we've been talking over the last few weeks on the show about anniversary specials, and I'm glad they've done better than previous anniversary specials on this occasion.
Talking about that, have you seen, you probably won't have done it, you've been a busy boy, have you seen the five-ish Doctors?
Nope.
You haven't?
No.
Right. That's your task for this afternoon. It's fantastically funny. Do you know what it is?
No.
Well, basically, Peter Davison. Sorry, Davison.
Yeah.
I realised a D slipped in it there, and I knew people would complain to you if I said Davidson.
Yes, I'm glad you corrected yourself.
Well, I have to. It's only polite. Yeah, Peter Davison. Last year, when all the 50th stuff was being first talked about, apparently his son said to him, "Are you going to be in the 50th? And he said, I don't know. And then it turned out he wasn't. So he said, well, I'm going to make my own one then. And you've got Peter Davison, Colin Baker, and Sylvester McCoy, with a brief appearance from Paul McGann as well, and the voice of Tom Baker done by your mate John Coleshaw, all basically, you know, pestering Stephen Moffat to try and get in to the 50th anniversary special, and their way of them actually getting into the 50th anniversary special, which is very entertaining. It's on YouTube. It's all over the place. It's called The Five-ish Doctors Reboot. It's very, very funny.
Good,
definitely worth half an hour of your time. And it just adds an extra little bit to the celebrations, I think, seeing all the old, you know, well, not all the old, all the old living doctors, bar Eccleston, who did get a little scene in the special, didn't he, with that little bit of cutaway footage from episode 8 of his first series. Well, so am I, because, but what does make me question things, though, is how different the story we saw on Saturday would have been if Eccleston had agreed to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think it would have been very different. It wouldn't have taken much of a rewrite, would it?
Not really, no.
Because all you'd have done is slot Eccleston's character instead of John Hurt's character, and you'd just have to change, you know, a little bit of the timey-wimey bits around the outside of it. So, you know, as good as John Hurt was, and he was very good, I still would have liked to see Chris Eccleston doing that role.
You would think that Eccleston, they wouldn't have got John Hurt in, they would have just used Eccleston as the War Doctor, I think.
Well, I think you've got to think along the premise that originally Moffat wanted to use 9, 10 and 11, or 10, 11 and 12, or 10A, the Sponge Doctor, and the meringue-flavoured Doctor. Because we can call them what we want now, apparently. There's you know, numeric systems don't mean anything anymore. Because apparently you can now add numbers in between 8 and 9. So not only is Stephen Moffat trying to rewrite the Doctor Whoniverse, he's also trying to rewrite how numbers are used, which, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Very briefly, what did you think of the Hurt Doctor's TARDIS console room?
Oh, loved it! And the white things at the back. But what are the white things at the back? No idea.
No
idea. But that was I loved it. Again, that was a lovely, really nice and easy, you know, tip of the hat to the classic series. Yeah. But what is quite strange is, obviously, you know, Sylvester McCoy's TARDIS had the white thingies, and then Paul McGann's TARDIS was completely different, having the front room basically in his TARDIS, and then John Hurt's Doctor TARDIS went back into an old style TARDIS with the white things and the central console. I mean, that was a very, very basic TARDIS, wasn't it, John Hurt's TARDIS? Because all it had was the console, the white wall with the things in the back, and a few tubes, you know, running beneath the walls. Oh, that was the other thing I was going to notice. No, I wasn't going to notice. I did notice it, and now I think I should make mention of it. And that was in the art gallery at the end. Did you notice what was on the wall behind them, adjacent to the Gallifrey Falls No More picture?
I might have forgotten. Please remind me.
Well, they looked remarkably like those circular, now hexagonal shape things that adorn the walls of the TARDIS. Now, yes. I'm going to make a bold prediction here.
Oh, yeah, go on then.
That Gallifrey is inside that picture. And it's something to do with the picture and the art gallery. That holds the key to where Gallifrey is, I reckon. I reckon we'll see that place again. Because, they could now stretch out this search for Gallifrey for the next 50 years. They could quite easily do that. I've got a funny feeling, though.
I don't think it'll be 50. I think at the longest it'll be is 10.
I don't even think it'll be that long. I think this will be something that because it's a Moffat idea, and if Moffat leaves at the end of the 8th or maybe 9th series, I think he'll be wrapped up by then.
Time War was a RTD idea, and it's only just been wrapped up like 3 years into the Moffat era.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but I think he'll want to wrap it up before he goes, because I think there's a certain increasing the arrogance between Russell T. Davis and Stephen Moffat, and I think Moffat is a lot more arrogant about his ideas, and RTD would have been going, "Ah, oh, yes, you can do anything you like to my Doctor Who. It doesn't matter. It's fine. You know, you can regenerate him if you want."
No, he was Indian.
You can add numbers in if you'd like to. It doesn't matter whatsoever. I don't mind.
Oh dear.
Did my Welsh go a little bit Indian then? So yeah, I think he'll wrap it up by the time he leaves. So it's a great new thing that, you know, we've got to look forward to. Yeah. But I just worry how he's going to get there. Well, obviously the long way round, as he said. But I do worry how he's going to get there. But it's a great new direction that the show's got to go in now, and I can't wait for the
future.
Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to the Christmas one now to see
how.
I mean, because obviously it's going to have all of the baddies in there, the Cybermen and the Daleks, and the Weeping Angels are going to make an appearance, and I've got a funny feeling the Weeping Angels are going to have a big say in how Matt Smith regenerates.
Ooh.
I think it's going to be a case. I had a funny feeling the other day that he was, you know, he was getting chased down by them or something, and they were about to touch him.
Hang on. Have you seen a preview of the Christmas special?
No, not at all. Oh. But I think that he's going to be chased down by them. They're going to catch him. They're just about to touch him to turn him into stone or send him back into an everlasting time loop, a la Amy Pond and dying boyfriend, Rory. And instead of allowing himself that, he gets someone to basically shoot him or kill him or something like that. So he has to regenerate. So the angels can't then take effect on him.
The Sisterhood of Khan, even.
Maybe.
Now, why would they bring the Sisterhood of Khan into that McGann episode if they
I think that was just a nod to the past again.
Oh, okay.
But I think they'll have a big say in how Matt Smith regenerates. Might be wrong. It's just a thought I had the other day, but the more I think about it, the more I sit there thinking, yeah, that really could work quite well, actually. So, we'll see. There was another bit. Well, there was something else I wanted to mention. And as soon as we finish on this, I think there was, oh, crikey, I should have mentioned that, because there's one other thing that was getting me about it. Oh, I really liked. I can't remember which it was. It either annoyed me or I liked it. But
the interaction between the 10th and 11th, now 12th and 11th Doctors.
that was brilliant. Yeah, the way that they worked together was obviously very good. I did like the. You know, the little wormy time hole thingy, worm.
Yeah. And I particularly liked where they were trying to program the sonic screwdriver 400 years to work out how to do the door, and then Clara just walked straight through it. It wasn't even locked. That's fantastic.
But aren't they forgetting something on that?
What?
The sonic screwdriver doesn't work on wood.
Ah, but he was reprogramming it so as it would disintegrate the door.
Well, yes, but therefore, if it was working on a calculation to try and work out how to, to the door for 400 years, then how come by the time that David Tennant's doctor got to the library and that he used his quote, "Sonic doesn't work on wood," how come he wasn't looking at it going, "Hold on a minute, there's already a calculation going on"?
That's what it doesn't, though, but that's what I say, it does if you give it 400 years to program a way of disintegrating the door, so that does work.
Yeah, but by the time that David Tennant had got into the library, probably 200 years or so passed.
That wasn't wood of that planet.
What? Spilt loads of Ribena on me trousers.
That's a bit silly. Unless, of course, you've got purple trousers, it doesn't really matter.
No, I've now got wet trousers. I hope no one looks inside clearly outside, because that's the opposite of inside. Because I'm currently sat here at the moment trying to dry the affected area of my jeans by rubbing it quite vigorously.
Oh, dear.
And I'm sure you can work out which area of my jeans.
Okay, thank you, yes. Anyway, I'm going to go and cook the dog's dinner, and thank you very much for coming on the show this week, and hopefully I can tempt you to come back on next week, but remains to be seen. I don't even know what we're doing on the show next week. I've completely lost track. I've got a schedule, but I don't know what the schedule is.
Have we got another special coming up next week?
We're so close to episode 200. Yeah, go on.
Well, talking about that, actually, obviously, Saturday's episode was episode 799, and the Christmas special, episode 800.
Oh, I see.
800th episode of Doctor Who on TV.
They should have some sort of celebration.
Maybe put it out on Christmas Day or something.
Yes. Anyway, thank you, Ben.
That's quite all right. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Pod Grammars. Nice to hear from you all again. I tell you what, if you any comments, do obviously go on the Facebook site, because I do like reading that. I always go through that and like responding to people, and also occasionally like trying to wind people up a little bit. So, oh, God, I know. It's a Stephen Moffat thing that no one ever worked out. But yes, I occasionally do like to wind people up a little bit. So if you fancy being wound up, go on Facebook. Great idea.
Yeah. And also, if you want to go on Facebook and see my photographs from the Doctor Who celebration, they're on there, on the group, so please do.
And on my personal page, there's a photo of my Dalek in my window, so you can click on the link from me.
And if anybody wants to add my own personal photographs, one taken by Deb, one taken by me, one taken by Deb, of Nicola Bryant and her famous Norks, please post
that. That's reminded me what else I was going to mention.
What, Nicola Bryant's
No, not Nicola Bryant. Joanna Page.
Ooh. Yes.
Now, after those couple of scenes where she was, you know, almost falling out of that dress.
Yes.
Which was a little bit risque for Saturday evening at that time. I mean, good gracious, when they were lying down having that picnic. Yeah. Blimey, there was a lot on view there, wasn't there?
The trouble is, though, in relation to Nicola's assets, there were three photographs taken on the day, one of which was brilliant. She was like leaning over and they were being pressed up and it looked great. And I took the photo, but the camera decided to focus on the two people either side. So it was all blurred. Nice. So I couldn't use that one.
When you say two people either side, you're not mean. All right. Yeah. You actually mean people.
But
right, yeah.
There's obviously one with me looking at the camera. She's squished one up nicely with her right arm, and another one that I took of her, I think, signing an autograph or something like that. And there she's pressed them up. She's a very good looking woman. I don't know how old she is now.
But she's all right. But anyway, I'm going to make a new group on the back of Nicola's Norks. Well, not literally on the back of Nicola's Norks. That would look really strange. Yeah. But I'm going to make a new group, and I'm either going to call it Joanna Page's Puppies or Queen Liz's Lovelies.
Okay. Anyway, thank you, Ben. See you again soon.
Bye, Joanna Page's Puppies.
Bye.
Hello, I'm Colin Baker. You lucky people are listening to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, the best podcast on the pod.
And now we bring in to the proceedings the old faithful in the shape of Mary Lang.
This fangirl's heart is just a flutter for all that I just saw over the weekend.
Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Oh, for God's sake, Gallifrey stands.
Robert Haynes.
Redecorated. I don't like it.
Matthew Kressel.
They're screwdrivers. What are you going to do? Assemble a cabinet at them?
Yeah.
Well, my one would have been, you're just a rabbit, aren't you?
Yes, anyway. You are.
Okay, welcome to the show. Right, no synopsis this week. We can just talk about what we liked about these particular two productions that are going out. Because I know, Kirby, you did mention on Facebook in regards to the Five-ish Doctors, which I think goes rather well with next week's review story, Light at the End, because it includes those particular Doctors. So, this week, we're going to initially look at Adventures in Space and Time. Now, I'm not going to synopsize it. Like I said, we're just going to talk about the production itself. Personally, well, I know there's a couple of people that didn't like a couple of bits because they thought it was a bit cheesy, but I was totally enthralled with this particular production.
Who could
totally
like that?
Puppets.
Uh-huh. Moffat, did you say?
No, I said, who couldn't like that?
Some people thought the bit that where Matt Smith appears at the end was a bit cheesy, but I thought it was totally in keeping with
Perfect.
Yes. It's a bit like the Tom Baker appearing at the end of of the Doctor. It's a similar sort of scenario. But anyway, going back to this particular production, the casting was amazing because apart from the one that played Ian didn't really look much like him. I thought he was a bit short for the part. I mean, maybe it was just me. Yes. Everybody else looked so great because at the end, remember they showed all the pictures, didn't they? What become of them in the last?
I didn't like the Troughton guy.
Yeah,
maybe not. But he was only on there for a bit, though, wasn't he?
The Ian character was so incidental to the whole story that it didn't bother me. You know, he didn't really have much to contribute. So,
but
I liked,
bother
Reese is online.
Oh my God, oh. Reese is online.
What the hell? What's going on?
What's going on, indeed?
It's a new day.
It's a miracle.
Wow. That's amazing.
Hell has officially frozen over for about the third time in the last 2 weeks. Is that Mr. Reese
Parsons? Yeah, Tom Baker's come on the show again, and I've returned to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
And you need, sorry, I thought you need to turn your mic up, but you're all right at the moment. We just started looking at the Adventures in Space and Time at the moment, Reese. And the first question goes to... Reese.
I don't know. I haven't seen it. There you go.
You haven't seen it. Have you not seen it?
I haven't seen it.
Does that mean that you're going to be spoiled?
Yet, no.
Because we're going to be talking about it. Does that matter?
It does. It does. What I'll do is I'll stay online and you just message me when you go to review the five-ish Doctors reboot and Day of the Doctor.
Okay. That today.
No, we're not doing it. Five-ish Doctors is next week when we're doing the Light at the End as well, because it's a sort of in keeping with those particular Doctors. Is that all right?
Yeah, I'll have to listen to that, but yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so just call me again when you move on to Day of the Doctor.
Good, thank you. Stay online.
Now, don't go running off to a rehearsal until we do that.
Yes. Okay. Well, don't worry, I'm done. I'm done for the evening. That's what she said. This is my evening, and it'll be fun. Yeah, that's what that is. Yeah.
Right then, okay, thank you, Reese. I'll get back to you.
Okay.
See you soon.
See ya.
Bye. Right then.
Is he gone? Can we talk about it?
Yeah, we can. Right. So, like I say, we're talking about the casting, and obviously the star of the show is David Bradley. Never played a part like... I've ever seen him play a character that was somebody who was really a real. Obviously, he's pretty good. Sort of evilly sort of characters he's played in various different productions. It's his first time he's played a living... person that we know of, and
I would have thought all the characters that he was playing were living, unless he was playing a vampire.
You know what I mean. I mean the actual character that once lived or has. Oh, never mind. But I just thought he was so William Hartnell.
He was
so much so that if he came into the main series to actually be the first Doctor, I'd be quite happy to go along with that.
Petition.
Yeah, we've already had a petition for Paul McGann's miniseries, so get another one going for that. Yes. But yes, he was so Hartnell, wasn't he? And that sort of got me into it straight away. The way they've sort of brought back to life all the sets and all the area. I suppose it's quite handy that the BBC Television Centre has closed down, that they can actually use that as a set. I must admit, when they had the Daleks over the bridge, I was looking in the background to see if I could see any modern day stuff. I suppose you could just about see some traffic lights in the deep distance. Yeah.
I think I read someplace that one of the big, the higher ups was in one of those Daleks.
Oh, yes.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'd have to find it.
Right, did we see any of the cameos?
I can imagine, though, that they would have CGI'd the background to make sure there wasn't anything.
Yes, of course they could have done. I didn't think of that one. But yes, did
cameos.
I saw we had Annika Wills in the bar with Toby Haydoke and
Gina Marsh.
End of the show. Gina
Marsh
as well. Yes, indeed. But apparently there was loads of them. Of course, at the beginning. Yeah, William Russell played the car attendant. A little bit old, but there you go, he was there.
Yeah. Behind a ridiculous mustache.
Yes. Yes, I don't think it worked, did it? It was clearly him. All right there, Robert.
No, my cat's trying to eat my dinner. Go!
Okay. Go! All right, anyway, so back to the...
Can't hand a Paul Conpad here going on.
Of course, we had... Brian Cox playing Sydney Newman.
Now, Sydney
not
Newman.
To be confused by Professor Brian Cox from the Science of Doctor Who. Again, convincing.
Brilliant.
It was all brilliant, wasn't it? Well done, Mark Gatiss. He's much better at writing stuff about the making of Doctor Who.
I think
it
was Mark Gatiss who was in one of the Daleks.
Oh, was he?
Okay. Are you sure, Kirby, you're not confusing that with where they recreated the same scene for more than 30 years in the TARDIS? Because I know...
Oh, yeah, that's where... You're right.
He was
in
the Daleks for that occasion. Yes. He was also
Kirby
has
been out-pedanted. Yes. This is a historic moment in the history of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
You are correct, yes.
All right, stop Daleking. Right. So... Yeah, because obviously it starts off really with the, I'm not going to do a synopsis, but it starts off with the end really, where he's been given the boot and he's sort of a bit sort of shocked and sad by it all.
Yeah.
And then we go back. It does a little view of the time sort of controller on the TARDIS console, and we go back to 1963. Pardon? What did you say?
Time rotor.
Whatever. No. There was the time. Display
talking about the
yearometer. The yearometer. Thank you. And then of course we have a very grumpy actor who's not getting any work really, and it's all the work he is getting is all about being a soldier and stuff. And of course, the only thing that disappointed me a little bit, they didn't show because Newman getting the inspiration for. Doctor Who, he just sort of turns up and says, oh, I've got this idea for a new science fiction series about a doctor, blah, blah, blah. Because obviously it started off, you see the TARDIS there, a police box, and a policeman come out of it. I thought, oh, great, we're going to have Newman walking past the police box and getting this idea. But Coburn had that idea. But somewhere along the line would have been nice to have had that inspiration.
That's because the police box comes into things far, far later. I mean, once again, and having had a conversation along these lines with somebody just within the last couple of days, there's a wonderful documentary on the beginning box set, the Doctor Who Origins, which I think Terry Malloy narrates, which lays out a lot of it. The thing is that Doctor Who, uniquely, I think, for a science fiction show, was created not by one person, as is the case with, say, Star Trek with Gene Roddenberry, but it was created by committee, and it actually comes out of these two rather boring and thick reports that the BBC commissions in 1962, early 63. And Newman kind of comes in and looks at the reports and starts formulating the idea around that. So,
that's not very cinematic, is it?
Exactly. So you just, Hitchcock once said that films are life with all the boring bits cut out. So,
yeah.
In fact, I don't think they had even come up with the police box at the time that they were trying to bring Hartnell in. Had they? There's a conversation in the movie where it's got a police box.
Yeah.
I think the movie does a very good job of condensing a lot of backstory characters and complicated stuff that was going on behind the scenes. But it remains very true to events as well, which I think is the important thing, and particularly when you think about things like the Julian Fellowes Titanic miniseries from last year, which got huge amounts of stuff wrong, and the amount of attention to detail that was paid into things when this was written, and clearly when it was produced as well, because you do get things like the sprinkler system that comes on when they're shooting in Lime Grove, which probably didn't happen, I don't think, during the original recording of An Unearthly Child, but that's an oft-told anecdote as well. But stuff like the doors that won't stay closed.
Yeah, I saw that in the pilot, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, that was great.
They also got where Jaclyn Hill tripped going into the doors.
Yes.
Again, she was quite well cast, actually. Well, she didn't do enough for blinking, though. It's the only thing she missed out on.
One of the cameos was Marco Polo himself. Mark Eden, indeed.
Yeah, Mark Eden. Yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
And it's Donald Baverstock, the guy who almost killed Doctor Who after four episodes.
Yes, but I mean, that was quite an interesting, part of the backstory. That was it. He was told to kill it.
And that actually happened as well.
Yeah. So that was interesting.
That's one of the reasons why they had the two episode the story right after the Daleks, because they were stalling for time.
It was originally supposed to be four episodes. And then they extended it to 13, and then things got a bit leery after that. And then it got renewed for the next 13. It kind of just went on from there. And by the time, it came up for recommissioning, as it were, the show was clearly already a success.
Yeah.
But I think that what the film does a very good job of portraying, though it does obviously fictionalize some stuff, like the scene, for example, in the design department where Verity Lambert eventually just goes in and sits down and says, "You're going to create my time machine, and I will sit here until you do it." I don't think that actually happened in real life, but it's a very good illustration of the problems they had with the various departments of the BBC.
And also the sexism towards Verity Lambert as well. And the racism, yeah. Very slight racism, as we said, towards Waris Hussein. But I think they covered it in just the right ingredients, you know, the amounts that they put into that particular aspect of it.
I would have thought that Toby Haydock would have served Waris Hussein, though.
Yes.
Probably.
Toby
Haydock was the bartender.
I know, he's a friend of the show, by the way. No, he's a family member of the show, beg your pardon.
Family member.
Yeah, I want to speak about the portrayal of Verity.
Yeah, brilliant.
Because all the time that I was watching it, I was saying to myself, is this real? Because I am so used to now viewing portrayals of the past where women were way more feminist, you know, than they really were at the time. And so Verity throughout this was looking, you know, more like a modern portrayal than a actual 1963 portrayal. But I've been reassured that, no, she really was a pretty gutsy lady.
Yeah.
And you do see her, you know, kind of gaining confidence with Sydney kind of pushing her a little bit to make things happen. So I was really pleased to see Verity as well portrayed as she was.
So what do we think of the actress that played Susan's character, as in Carol Ann Ford?
Very much like her, I reckon.
Mm. Yeah, she seemed very true to form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Carry on. Sorry, I interrupted somebody then.
No, you did.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
Oh, I made yourself. I think I was going to add something to what Mary was saying, which is that having had this conversation the other day as well, that, you know, she was brought in by Sidney Newman as a breath of fresh air into the BBC, because as the film portrays, the BBC was very much establishment, and was, you know, people who'd been there since the 1930s and 40s. And there was a reason why in the 50s and early 60s, the BBC had a reputation for being radio with pictures. And it's this new generation of producers coming in, like Verity Lambert, who sort of, to a certain extent, push the old guard out of the way, and her conflict with Rex Tucker, which the film does a good job of portraying as well. And the fact that Rex Tucker thought he was the producer of the show, and he was just kind of hold her hand and sort of, you know, push her this way and the other. And he would, you know, and she wasn't that kind of person. She didn't want that. Mm. And they didn't agree on anything. And eventually she won out, and he, you know, and he left.
Yeah.
So I like the film. Go ahead, Robert.
No, I was going to say, I like the bit with the auto cue.
Yeah, because he invented it, didn't he? Yeah, that's right, yeah. I knew that beforehand, but I think that probably didn't happen, that scene, but they did. I'm glad they inserted it. And the other thing I liked was the scene when Hartnell's not quite sure about whether the part's right for him, and Sidney Newman sort of butters him up brilliantly.
Yes.
That was really, really good.
Yeah.
And I liked how they had the pictures of the people being considered for the doctor out there. And you had Leslie French, Cyril Cusack.
Yeah.
Who else was in there?
And then, of course, you see the figure in the BBC Television Centre, which was also Leslie French, was it not?
No.
Oh, no, that was a Broadcasting House, wasn't it? Sorry. Get it
Broadcasting
right.
House is Leslie French.
And what about the scene where the caveman refused to have his teeth blacked up?
I guess.
Oh, yes.
One thing that really.
It's just going to say a shadow, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. Sorry.
One thing that was really interesting to watch this only a couple of weeks after I watched that documentary about the television center. Go, if you haven't seen that documentary, go back and watch it. And it was really a loving tribute to the building, but you can see little things like where Sidney Newman in Adventures walks down corridor one way and gets mixed up, and you see him walking past the same door the other way because people get lost going around those circles.
Yes.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Good point.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Sorry, Kirby. Well, I was going to say, I've heard this story. I've heard stories along these lines before in Chicago. And Simon Gurria, he's one of the big Finnish writers, has done work with for the BBC as well at Television Center before it closed, talked about the fact that Television Center is laid out like a question mark. And as a result, it's very easy to get lost because of the way that, as a result of the way the building is laid out, you do end up with corridors that just kind of go in very weird directions, and which the film does a good job of portraying as well. And I actually discovered that apparently do the, you know, the Google Street View thing, actually did their photography of Television Center while this was being produced. So you do, if you go on the Google Street View of Television Center, you get a behind the scenes look.
Yeah.
Really?
Good stuff. Thank you for that. Right then. Of course, they had to recreate the set for the Dalek story, and that was done superbly. And you know, the behind the scenes stuff was recreated brilliantly. The Daleks themselves are just great, and I hope they keep them for future museum representation.
Yes.
That's the most, for me, the best thing, the way they've recreated all the old equipment and stuff. It just is amazing. It just really helps to bring it to life and take you back to that era. Sorry.
You know what I found?
Yes. No. Sorry, you're going to tell me, aren't you?
You know when you have a look at the sets for the Daleks one, you know that corridor, and they show you the exterior of it, so it's... I think that's... You know when they have these documentaries behind the scenes of, say, for example, the Daleks, I thought that got across what people were saying about, you know, how much money they sort of didn't have. But when you have a look at something like that, you get an idea of how good they were at creating, you know, alien sets with just what they had.
Yeah.
Rather than somebody saying, oh, this is all we had. Yeah. I think they're illustrated, you know, it's, a picture says 1,000 words.
We've heard over the years about, you know, tatty sets and wobbly sets and the fact that the sets were terrible. And you look at the sets lovingly recreated, and they look fantastic. Yeah. And you just, and sometimes you just, I can't help but wonder, you know, are we miss, is there to a certain extent maybe a sort of a collective mismemory of things that the sets were that way, especially when you look at the stuff there, which is, you know, painstakingly recreated.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we've seen wobbly sets actually watching the show, and also there was the lovely joke about it. In Day of the Doctor.
There was
indeed.
Oh, yeah. And look at this. It doesn't move.
Anyway, the other thing I thought was quite interesting is obviously they had the behind the scenes of Marco Polo. Obviously, we never saw that in colour, so it was nice to see them represent it in a colour.
Yes.
And
they went out and actually made costumes for the web planet, but we only saw them
briefly
in passing.
Yeah, I know. But at least we saw them. At least we saw them. And also they did the behind the scenes of the Reign of Terror, and of course we see it's William Hartnell's granddaughter dressed as a Dalek, which is again 2 years in, we've got people in costumes.
Which was a real thing as well. Jessica Carney talks about it in the More Than 30 Years in the TARDIS documentary.
That's a real one. They did not reproduce that costume. They bought it off of eBay.
Did they? Brilliant. And the other thing, that charming scene of Hartnell in the park with the kids, which was
wonderful.
Sorry, Kat, I interrupted somebody again.
Oh, did anyone catch Nick Briggs?
Yeah, he played the Dalek voice person, which was apt, I suppose.
Yeah, Peter Hawkins. Yes,
and he did it really well because he did it in the style of Peter Hawkins. But he would do because he's an expert, isn't he? But yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you listen to Big Finish, you would know he does that kind of thing all the time, Adam.
Thank you for that. And also,
oh my goodness, Adam's going to be forced to listen to a Big Finish.
Well, I've already done it. I've already listened to Light at the End. It's brilliant. But more of that next week.
I haven't yet. I have it, but I have not had a chance to listen.
All right, Robert, calm down. Did anybody feel that the scene where Carol Ann Ford leaves and obviously Hartnell has a bit of a heart-to-heart with her is very reminiscent of the scene in Tomb of the Cybermen when the Doctor talks to Victoria?
Oh, yeah.
It reminded me a little bit of that. I hadn't thought of that.
Now
that you say it, it does.
But I'll tell you what, isn't the prop for the that they've recreated for the TARDIS console absolutely beautiful? That center column. And it's pristine beauty. And that,
I have it in my lounge room.
But the fact that they did that in that time in the 1960s created something so beautiful that glided up and down so nicely, which indeed it did. That's what she said.
Although I don't believe it had a mechanism to move it up and down. Wasn't it manually operated?
I don't know, Kirby. I thought you would know that.
I thought there were people inside pumping up and down.
I'll tell you what, Kirby.
Yeah, that's the story that's always told on the DVD extras and whatnot.
I'll tell you what, Kirby, right? There's a thing, it's called Wikipedia, right? I don't know if you've probably heard of it, where there's probably some opportunity to find out one way or another.
Which story
That it had to be manually operated.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's the one I've always heard on the extras, because that was one of Matt Irvin, who became the special effects guy in the, towards the particularly in the Davison, in the late Baker, into Davison. Although, that was one of his early things to do, was to make the TARDIS console go up and down.
Mark and Gatiss, I really love what is so has so much attention to detail that possibly this is partially correct is with the mechanism. Maybe they went from manual to
near the end of Hartnell's time it may have been mechanized. I just love Hartnell's commitment to his character by wanting to know exactly what all the buttons and switches did and where he had to be. And even at that, and it was so sad when the new producer took over and Hartnell's arguing with them about, well, I can't do that there because the switch is on the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And isn't this thing supposed to be going up and down? And it was sad and wonderful at the same time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I was disappointed we didn't see a switch marked fast return switch.
Yeah. Kirby, you just shouted out that is Susan. What do you mean?
Yeah, the woman in the street in the curlers calling the kids in is Carol Ann Ford.
Oh, is it? Excellent.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't see that one. Well done. All right, it's shocking, isn't it, Robert, to find out that you didn't see anything when it actually originally went out. But yeah, I mean, it's also the gradual sort of decline of his health, I suppose, was very well. Depicted and very sad, and you know, you would really feel for him.
I'm glad they didn't shy away from that as well.
Indeed,
you know, actually,
yeah. So, to sum up, this was a thing of wonderment, and I think that David Bradley could indeed get an award for his performance because it's absolutely.
I sure hope so.
And it culminates with a beautiful scene of him in the TARDIS doing the 10th Planet just before the regeneration, and then of course Matt Smith doing his cameo, which I loved. So there are a couple of people, Ben, who didn't like that, but I absolutely loved
it. I didn't realize at first that that was CGI'd Matt Smith. I thought they actually hauled him into the set.
I immediately assumed he was CGI.
It did look a bit superimposed, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Well, I think it was meant to as well. So, you know, but he was shot separately as well.
God, I've just heard this, or has this been on the news? Oh my God, they shot Matt from Dead. They shot Matt Smith. Oh my God.
He shot him separately.
Is he all right?
Dr. Who killed Kennedy.
But they shot him separately.
Dr. Who killed Kennedy.
Anyway, right, so let's sum up.
And are we at the point now where we can handle, after seeing it in both of the stories, or maybe it was all three stories, having someone say, I don't want to go? Yeah, it was in all three. That's right.
I just want
to say, but obviously it's quite clear that I love this. But the thing is, sometimes when you're waiting for something like this to happen so long, it turns out to be a bit of an anticlimax. Well, this, it wasn't an anticlimax at all. It was absolutely perfectly done, brilliantly done by somebody who obviously loves Doctor Who, knows it very, very well, and did his research and put in a couple of extra scenes just to embellish it a little bit. Absolutely fantastic. Hope it comes out on Blu-ray, because I've only released it on DVD. I want it in HD. Fantastic. Anybody else?
Mine's on DVD already, because I burned it to DVD.
Well, I've still got it in HD stored on my Sky Pluser. Right then, Matthew, quickly.
A well-acted, beautifully produced tribute to the early years of Doctor Who and to the men and women who helped to turn it into a worldwide phenomenon 50 years later.
Sorry, Matthew, carry on.
One day I will get a review in.
One day I'll come back.
I shall come back.
Yes, I'll come back. Carry on, Matthew. Sorry.
I will not pull my hair out.
Sorry, Matthew, carry on. You said phenomenon.
I'm done.
Okay. Matt, Kirby.
Oh, wow. Just wow. I had no doubts when I heard Mark Gatiss was doing this that it was going to be perfect. And it was.
Thank you.
And
sorry.
We watched it as soon as we could, kind of before it was on BBC America somehow.
Very naughty.
And And Julia, the geek, had also been looking forward to it. And we watched this together. And she kept shushing me as I was recognizing people. Mm. And we tried to bring in Fred, and she found the beginning boring, so she didn't watch it. Mm-hmm. But then on Sunday, we went to a meeting of the Atlanta Gallifreyans where they showed it there, and Fred really enjoyed it then.
Good. Right. Done?
Ooh. Yeah.
Mary?
Well, all the time I was watching it, and I enjoyed the period portrayal, and I enjoyed learning all that I did, because I don't know that much about the beginnings of Doctor Who. But throughout, I was always asking myself, gee, I wonder if that really happened, and, oh, this looks great. I hope that this is true. So at the time of watching it, I was a little distracted by my own thoughts. But the more I learn about it afterwards, how accurate it really was, the more I appreciate it in retrospect. So, yeah, I really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Mary. Robert.
Yeah, this is something that I was looking forward to ever since I first saw a preview of it. And it, just like you, it lived up to, I reckon, and surpassed expectations.
Yeah.
I was actually looking forward to this actually more than the Day of the Doctor.
Yeah, me too.
And also, you know, I love, you know, BBC, what they do very well is period stuff. And yeah. You know, this just shows you an example of them going back, recreating the 60s and doing such a fabulous job at it.
Yeah.
I like that they didn't shy away from certain things. Sorry?
Recreating the 60s, cigarette smoke and all.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
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 Very unsort of PC. But,
yeah, of course. Well, it had to be right. Didn't have to
I like
be
that
accurate.
Attention. The attention to detail.
I almost feel like if that had been made in America, they would have cut out all the cigarette smoke. I guess. I guess they smoke a lot in, what's that?
Mad Men?
Yeah, Mad Men, yeah.
Do they smoke in that?
Yeah, they
yes.
do.
Yeah.
Okay.
All the time.
Get out of here, you twit. So the dog decided to wrap the cable around her leg and then try and walk through and take everything with her. Carry on.
Surprise, surprise.
What I was going to say is some when you watch a lot of the DVDs and listen to a lot of the commentaries, you often hear these things, these anecdotes. And really, it was just this, it really brought all these anecdotes together in a storytelling way. And just absolutely fabulous the way that they done that. So, yeah, well done. Absolutely brilliant. I can't wait till it comes out on a release. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Because it came out already last week.
Oh, right. Thank you. I think he means in Blu-ray. I want it in Blu-ray. Right then.
Yeah.
So thanks, everyone. So thumbs up. I'm looking forward to a part two of that one when they do the Hartnell era.
Come with me.
I can't. I'm going to listen to the 20 megabyte podcast.
You come with me.
Me come with you?
Yes.
Me come with you. Tempting.
Okay, Mr. East Parton.
East Rath?
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
What do you think of it?
Pearson.
Hello.
Would you like to do a quote or something as everybody else seems to do before we move on?
Oh, boy. A specific quote? I can't think of one at the moment.
Doesn't matter. It's
a machine that goes ding.
Sorry, that was Mary
That's
talking
good.
Over your quote then. Do you want to do that one again?
Yeah, I was going to say, Reese has been putting quotes on Facebook endlessly.
Yeah, but they're kind of exchanges between the doctors. But Tennant's one about it's a machine that goes ding.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. I thought you liked that one.
Yeah, that was great.
Okay, right then. We're going to move on now to Day of the Doctor. Now, how did we all watch this? I'll tell you how I watched it. I watched it in an auditorium at the XL with about 5,000 Doctor
Who
fans.
Yes, brag about it.
And it really did add to the occasion. Isabella stayed awake for the whole thing. And to be there, for instance, when things like Capaldi's face appear on the screen, Tom Baker comes on at the end, to be there amongst a great big crowd of Doctor Who fans, you know, to see something like that. And the only difference I think we had when we watched it, they played a little Sontaran introduction about 2D film, blah, blah, blah. What we didn't get until I watched it when I got home was the preview of the Christmas special. I was a bit disappointed because we did sit in our seats to see if that would happen. It didn't happen. But Right. Into
there,
the
there needs to be a rock group called Capaldi's Eyes.
Yeah. Right. So that's how I watched it. Let's go around the table. Reese, let's go with you. How did you experience it?
Well, the first time it was 6:50 in the morning. I saw it on the TV, but then I went to a cinema, a local cinema, and watched it. And it was, like you said, watching it in an auditorium filled with fans was brilliant.
Yeah.
And one moment you didn't mention was when the 11th Doctor says to Clara, "Don't worry, it's just timey-wimey stuff."
Yeah.
Hertz Doctor says, "Timey-wimey," yes. And then the 10th Doctor just goes, "I don't know where he picks this stuff up." The reaction to that.
But then it's later on he sarcastically says it, doesn't he? Which makes me laugh. The Hurt Doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, I'll tell you what, that's the only thing I missed out on is a 3D, but I'll swap what I did on Saturday for a 3D viewing any time, but I would still like to see it in 3D. Sorry, Reese, you carry on.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Robert?
I couldn't get up at 3:50 in the morning to watch it, believe it or not. But
you call yourself a fan.
I got up at 6 o'clock. And then I watched what I'd recorded of it.
Yeah.
And I was so annoyed that there was no cinemas sort of nearby. I'd have to travel like 60 kilometers to actually see a viewing of it. So I vetoed that.
And you call yourself a fan.
I
don't have any money. Okay,
fair enough.
But I would have loved to have watched it with a bunch of fans.
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, watching it at all was great, but it did enhance it for me. That's why I watched it again yesterday, just to see if it was just as good as it was. You know, it wasn't just the fact that I was in a place that had a great atmosphere, you know. But indeed,
as we say, how we first watched it. Also, how many times has everyone watched it so far?
Twice for me. Twice.
Once.
Just once.
Three times.
Okay.
I think I've watched it. Five.
Okay, as you've watched it the most, you can see. Tell us how you watched it the first time.
Watched it the first time in my living room with Julia the Geek and my youngest daughter Mary. Fred was going to watch it, but she decided to take a nap. But then she watched it that evening because we. Fred and Julia and I went to a gathering at the Holiday Inn in Atlanta, at Atlanta Perimeter, called Doctor Who 50 Years of Adventure. And I discovered that the greatest way to watch a new episode is with a crowd of enthusiastic fans.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
That was fantastic.
Good. It was beautiful. Yeah.
And I got to meet lots of fan friends of the show.
Did you?
Including Nicole Mazza. Try to think of some other people that we know always listen. The Earth Station Who,
yep.
Folks.
They listen, do they?
Mike Faber.
Excellent.
I think they listen.
Oh, okay.
If you listen, let us know.
Yeah. Good point.
Yes, please.
And at that, I also got hauled up on stage for the podcast of Earth Station Who that they were recording.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Of course,
you'll be on their episode.
Yes, yeah, so I of course told them
plugged
20 Meg by Doctor Who. Podcast.
Which reminds me to thank Adam Purcell for plugging my book, The Ultimate Doctor Who Quiz Book, Staggering Stories. I haven't listened to it yet, but thank you, Adam. And thank you for the Doctor Who podcast people that were prepared to speak to me at the Doctor Who celebration, specifically Michelle, who seemed to be particularly enthusiastic about speaking to me. I just bumped into a couple of reprobates here on the way into the auditorium. Hello.
Hello, Adam.
Hello.
Hello.
Who are you?
I don't know. I've forgotten. It's been a long day. I'm James from the Doctor Who podcast.
I'm Ian from the Doctor Who podcast.
And?
I'm Michelle from the Doctor Who podcast.
You said you might see me, didn't you?
Our latest edition.
Hello, latest edition. That's a strange name. Hello.
Hi.
Oh, is that the first time he's ever spoken on a podcast?
No, he was on last week reviewing Science of Doctor Who.
So I was nearly privileged then, wasn't I? The Science of Doctor Who was good, wasn't it? Nodded. Doesn't work too well on audio presentations, does it? No. Now, how are we?
Doing wonderful.
Enjoying it?
Loving it. Loving the day, loving the trip.
Who have you met so far?
Me.
James. James and Ian and Leeson.
Leeson's here? Where's Leeson?
No, Leeson's in Lincoln.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, Stephen's
around. But he's not here, though.
Stephen's around somewhere. We've seen him today. But no, in terms of famous people, I saw Terence Dick come out the toilet, if that counts.
Well, somebody bumped into four doctors in the lift earlier on.
Oh, really? It's a strange place to hold a surgery, really.
Bumped into
it?
John Coleshaw, but forgot to record something because I was so taken aback. And that chap who does news round as well.
John Craven?
No, the one that does it nowadays.
Oh, I didn't know it was still on.
I think it's still on. I don't know. No, do I actually?
It's on CBBC.
Or used to do it, anyway. Yes, I think it is. Anyway, nice to see you. I think I'll go this way. I'll see you later. Tell you bye.
Oh, good. You did find some people.
Yeah. I only bumped into them. I saw them. They were walking ahead of me and I saw their Doctor Who podcast.
But they recognised
tops.
You.
No, well, no,
so
because no, because James said, "Who are you?" I said, "Adam for the 20th podcast." And then Michelle went, "Oh, hello." So, yeah. I was wearing a T-shirt, quite clearly said, the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast. But there you go.
Yes.
That's what I say about other podcasts. Okay, have you done Kirby?
Who are you? Yes.
Have you done Kirby?
Have you listened to their review yet?
No, I haven't actually. No.
Oh, okay.
What, the Doctor Who podcast?
Doctor Who podcast. No. They were less than enthused.
That's unlike them, but I will specifically download that. Right then. So if you're done Kirby, we'll move on to Mary.
Yes.
Yeah, mine is probably the least enthusiastic report because I missed the simulcast because I wasn't home for it, but I did tape it. But then I chose to watch the rebroadcast later on BBC America, which was so broken up with advertising that it takes all the momentum out of it. Yeah. And then I had tickets to go see the 3D presentation at a theater. But my neighbor had an emergency that I had to go get involved in, and so I never did get to go see the 3D version.
That's a real shame.
So my one and only viewing has been the commercially interrupted version on BBC America.
No, that's a shame. Matthew.
That may have colored the way that you watched it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, it may have, but I'm not sure.
I've seen it, as I said, three times now. I saw the original simulcast when it went out. I went over to the apartment of one of my fellow Conquistadors organizers and watched it there and then stuck around there for a bit through a rerun of End of Time before they did the repeat with the commercials, which I have to say was infuriating to the point I was about ready to throw my phone at the TV. I got so aggravated with commercials. I was lucky enough last night to get to see it in
we only
a local
it the first
movie theater.
Time, but you can carry on if you like. Go on, carry on. Sorry,
I'll shut up then.
No,
I'll
you carry on. Kirby did. You can carry on.
Well, I just want to mention I was lucky enough last night to see it in a movie theater in 3D here in Huntsville.
Very lucky.
And with about there is a photo that I don't know if I put it up on 20 megabyte. I know it's on the Conquistadors page and my page. A part of that crowd, and that's just a part of it. There's a whole six or seven rows that are off to the right of the photo, which had another 75 to 100 people sitting there. And it was really incredible to kind of see it and to be in the middle of that audience and to have moments like when Capaldi comes up, because that got a cheer and a round of applause.
That's what she said.
Yeah, indeed. That was brilliant. There's so many little moments like the opening titles.
Yes, you did. I see the picture on the Conquistadors page, but I don't think you put it on 20 yet.
The opening titles got a great big ovation. Obviously, nobody stood up. At the end, nobody stood up, but there was a massive, long ovation at the end of the episode. But we were lucky enough to have people like Barnaby Edwards and that off the stage having a quick interview before the show, and they actually sat in the same row as us. They had these reserved seats across the.
Matthew, you haven't even been asleep since you saw it, have you?
No, I have not.
Right, I'm telling you what. Before we move on,
and
I'm going to have to reboot my Mac.
No, I have a question. Okay, I have a question for Matthew. If seeing it in 3D, it enhanced it.
Oh, yes, immensely. Yes, the paintings in particular.
It was
clearly
the
3D effect, but also a lot of, you notice a lot of the shots and stuff are laid out in a particular way that really brings out the 3D. Stuff like that, but also there's during the early scenes with Elizabeth first when she's being chased through the forest, you'll notice there's like branches and whatnot in the foreground, which it doesn't look strange or anything when you're watching in 2D, but it seems like an interesting choice of shot. And when you see it in 3D, you suddenly realize, oh, that's why they did that. And stuff like when they do the swooping into the painting to reveal Hurt's doctor and later all three of them. It looks incredible in 3D.
Mm. Okay.
It did.
Right.
I'll bet they're going to release it on Blu-ray in 3D.
Yeah, they will do, I suspect, but not just yet. Right then, sorry.
You mentioned you got Strax putting a warning up there about theatre etiquette. Did you get David Tennant and Matt Smith introducing the 3D element? Because that was a lot of fun.
No, obviously I wouldn't have got that, but yeah. Anyway, I'm going to reboot the Mac because we're gapping and I don't want to spend so much time editing out gaps. So stay online, please.
Hi, this is Fraser Hines and you're listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello.
That was quite easy, wasn't it?
Hello. Fancy
hotline. Took too long.
No, it didn't. Okay, right then.
Yours does, Kirby.
The episode itself, this is the Day of the Doctor. Now, of course, it starts off with a recreation of the original title sequence, which just warms my heart. Beautifully done. Yes. The music's been remastered, obviously, but it's still the same. But when the policeman sort of walks past, I think, John Hurt's going to turn up, but it wasn't. So I was and of course, there's a sign by the school that points to the scrap merchants. Not quite sure that actually would have been there. But again, for effect, it doesn't matter. Did anybody notice the chairman of governors on the sign?
Yes.
And the headmaster was?
W. Coburn.
2 points to Matthew. Right.
I noticed that like 6-8 months ago when they posted it online.
But you see, we're sensible and we avoid.
Thank you, Reese. Point to Reese.
The junkyard was right around the corner, why did Ian and Barbara have to drive there?
Exactly.
They were being lazy.
Doesn't matter. Anyway, talking about this. Now, this is. Thank you, Robert.
Later, things have changed.
Is this the same school from the original? Probably not, because it was all in studio.
Oh,
no.
But it was the original school from the Remembrance of the Dalek stories.
No, that's a shame, isn't it? Doesn't look like it.
No,
but I didn't bother looking up.
How many of you didn't realise that Clara was qualified to be a teacher?
Me. I didn't know that.
Yeah, amazing. Well, she's quite a clever girl, really, isn't she? Well, she is obviously
I think
quite
she was
a clever.
Just a nanny.
Well, she's obviously very, very highly qualified. She's able to step into a job at a school. But I'm not going to grumble about it. I did like that.
Waste no more time arguing about what a good man should be. Be one, Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah, but if you also look at it, remember I said last week about Unearthly Child, about that character that did look very much like Jenna Coleman. And there she is working in that school 50 years later.
But also, did you notice that... she said, waste no more time, and straight away from the beginning, you've had the words no more in the episode.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that was highlighted on the whiteboard, whatever it was.
No more.
Yeah.
No more.
Yeah.
No more.
No.
So anyway. No more. And, so she rides a rotorbike straight into the TARDIS. She has to put the brakes on pretty quick, I would imagine, because it's not that much distance between the door and the console.
Now, some people are saying that that's the motorbike that could drive up the shard. Is it the same one?
I don't know, Kirby.
I don't know, but I guess it would.
No idea, and don't care.
Thank you, Mary.
If I may very quickly add something. After the 3D showing last night, they showed a very short 5 or 6 minute long behind the scenes thing that was narrated by Colin Baker, and they did a behind the scenes thing on that scene where the actual stunt itself of it going in there was in fact done by a male stuntman. Which led to some hilarity in the video and a good laugh out of the audience.
Okay, thank you. Right. So, of course, the TARDIS gets picked up by a helicopter, but I do love the bit where the Doctor says to Kate's daughter, "Nice scarf." Of course, these are little things just thrown in there just for our fun, but it's the right amount of it, you know. Because if you're not a Doctor Who fan and you're just watching this because it's a special episode of Doctor Who, they won't. Diminish your enjoyment of the story. I don't think.
How often do they change the batteries in the Ravens at the tower?
Yes.
I don't know.
Love that. That was great.
Yeah.
Can I just ask my fellow pedants a quick question?
I've gone very quiet. Come on.
The character who's wearing the scarf is identified as, I kept thinking she looked, as Osgood. And particularly with the glasses she's wearing. Do we think she's related or perhaps the daughter of Sergeant Osgood?
Well, that would mean that Kate has been, because isn't it Kate's daughter? I thought it was Kate.
No. It's not Kate's daughter.
Oh, isn't it? Oh, sorry.
No.
That would be Osgood's granddaughter. Yeah, I would say it's Osgood.
That's what I thought when we heard about her name. I thought it was Osgood's granddaughter or daughter.
Yeah, I'd say that.
Yeah, that was my first thought.
Osgood from where?
The Corporal Bell.
The demons. Yeah, the demons, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Obviously we get into the gallery where we have these Gallifreyan paintings, and then
I loved him hanging from the TARDIS. Loved that.
Except I don't see how he managed to reach around and grab the bottom of the TARDIS when he fell out.
Well, don't worry about that, Kirby. Doesn't matter. Matt Smith apparently did that himself, that particular stunt. So, and then we see a depiction of the Time War and very iconic appearance of the ninth sort of War Doctor being absolutely brilliant and kick butt with the gun and everything. Fantastic stuff. John Hurt was just immense, and he was the right cast for this particular episode and part. And
I want more John Hurt.
Yes.
I want more Paul McGann.
I do like the consistency. I do like the consistency of the Time Jelly. Lord sort of hierarchy. Apart from the fact the costumes have gone back to the original Seal of Rassilon rather than the RTD version of it, but the room was in keeping with the end of time, room. But we didn't have the soothsayer tapping a finger on the table.
Right. Well, it's because
it's different room.
Not only different room, but two completely different things as well. What we saw in End of Time was Rassilon in the High Council, whereas what we're seeing in Day of the Doctor is the War Council. Right. And in fact, there's a very specific line in this where is it the assistant, whoever the lieutenant is or whatever, to the general says, the High Council's in the emergency sessions and they have plans of their own. And he's like, the High Council's plans have already failed. So there is a tie-in to tie this back into End of Time as well. They don't contradict each other as much as a lot of people thought on first viewing.
If you go back to End of Time, the Doctor says inside the Time War, when asked where they came from, he says inside the Time War, the whole war was time locked, like sealed inside a bubble. It works.
But what I did like about this, Gallifrey was so Gallifrey. They really did create that really well. But now, Billy Piper appears. Now, I quite like the fact that she's not Bingo and she's not Rose in this. She's playing this sort of half bad wolf, half wrecked sort of TARDIS.
It was great.
She for me, obviously she's a bad wolf, but she's also part of the TARDIS. So she talks and acts just like Saran Jones did when she was playing the TARDIS. And I thought that worked well.
She's part of the moment, not part of the TARDIS.
No, but she is, there's the TARDIS is in her. She's
bad wolf part of her.
Yeah, the bad wolf part of her.
I see. Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. And I did love this aspect and the fact that she was just playing a completely different character.
She mocked John Hurt. That was funny. Yeah. No more.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Question.
Yeah.
Is the moment related to the moment being prepared for? Or are they different moments?
I don't know.
What are you talking about?
What do you mean?
He's talking about Tom Baker.
The moment has been prepared for Tom Baker.
Never mind. Could be, but never mind.
Was this an attempt at humor, Kirby?
Probably.
No, it's a serious question.
It's a genuine question.
Because that's quite deep stuff, with her being there and the Doctor sort of contemplating destroying everything. And then we suddenly shift gear to great comedy, which is another thing I love in any sort of drama, that they can go from, harrowing potential suicide to brilliant humor and comedy. Fantastic stuff.
And as Matt Smith said, all John Hurt has to do is just kind of point his eyes at the camera and you're looking at him. He's amazing.
Back to the moment. End of Time Part 2, Rassilon asks what news of the Doctor, and we know his intention. He still possesses the moment, but he'll use it to destroy Daleks and Time Lords alike. So well done. This is perfect continuity.
Well done. I like that. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh. Yeah, if you twist and scrape and, you know, dig for, you know, things to tie in, sure, it works.
Indeed.
Well, I don't think
it works better if you don't have commercials interrupting it.
Yes, hey, man.
Sure. You need to watch it again, Mary. You really do. But anyway, right. So yes, David Tennant steps straight back into it as if he's never been away. Yeah. And is absolutely
like
is fantastic.
Spiky.
Oh, I hated that. His hair needed to be spiked.
It did, yes.
Yeah, his hair.
But
yeah,
he's had it ruffled a few times by Elizabeth.
His hair needed to be spiky, and his suit needed to be less tight.
Yeah, but he needed to look skinny for that comedy line.
Because we needed the 11th Doctor to say he looks like a special effect.
Yeah, yes. But the Zygons again, they were brilliant because they did look so much like the original ones, yet slightly enhanced. So they haven't done. The good thing about that is a lot of when they bring back classic series villains or
like,
monsters, they overdo update.
They did overdo it a little bit because of the orange goo, but I just watched Terror of the Zygons last week, and I did like it.
Yeah. And of course, we've got the brilliant scene with him and the machine that goes ding and the rabbit.
I love the way he doesn't just say ding. He says it's a machine that goes ding.
Yeah. The only problem I had with, although I love the actress that plays Elizabeth, she was a bit more buxom than
she was, wasn't she?
But when you look at the painting, she's quite skinny. And of course, the original Elizabeth was very, very skinny. So, that was quite.
Well, that's because. Yeah, it's because Joanna Page, who was playing the part, had just had a baby 6 weeks earlier.
No excuse. Yes. And also, I quite like the fact that there's always been these little references back to Queen Elizabeth and the Doctor's relationship.
Oh, yes,
they've tied that bit up as well nicely.
Especially
in the Shakespeare code when she says off with his head. We know.
I know, yeah.
What am I going to do? He sort of thinks, what is he going to end up doing?
When they rode out of the TARDIS, the doors weren't bigger on the inside. You nearly took my head off, and that's my job.
Now we'll have a quick reference.
I don't see how that could have been because he's taller than she is on the saddle.
It's a joke, Kirby. Don't rip apart.
Right. A quick reference to the five-ish doctors. Of course, when the Osgood character meets the doctor in that room with all those figures covered in cloths, are supposed to be the other doctors. About
yeah.
Can't watch it seriously now.
Has that actually been confirmed? I want to think that it is.
I'd like to think so, but I don't think it is.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
But I did like was Matt Smith when he gets the fez, his reaction to it. And he's the Clara. You just can't walk past
day,
the fez. Yeah, one day you'll walk past the fez. Yeah.
Never gonna happen.
No, that got a rather large laugh. There's a few scenes that got large laughs, actually. And I just love watching Smith and Tennant together. I'm hoping that one day there'll be another multi-doctor story which will have both of them in it.
Yes.
It won't be for at least another 5 years. 60th, they'll probably look nothing like they do now.
Matt, he doesn't look anything like he did when he started, pretty much.
Yeah.
But you know, the line I liked was that one of them is a Zygon, and he says, I'm not judging you.
The other sad thing of that, of course, it'd be nice to see John Hurt playing the Doctor again, just because he was just wonderful. And again, he did interact with the other two so well, but he's getting on a bit now, and I think it's very unlikely that we'll see these three again in Doctor Who, which is quite sad. And also, going back to the McGann thing, imagine adding McGann to this particular team.
Oh,
that would have been fantastic.
Oh, imagine adding Nichols. Yeah.
Such a shame, but at least we got what we got.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, going back to the issue that keeps getting brought up about, you know, the multi-doctor stories and why there's more doctors in this. One day I'm going to come up with a better phrase to avoid this situation.
Or you'll find a way of reacting, no matter what you say.
I'm going to get a permanent crease in my forehead from every time you guys do that.
I've got one in the back of my head, funny enough. But of course, they end up getting incarcerated in the dungeons, which was a very long scene in which they go on about sonic screwdrivers. It was really, really clever, brilliantly clever writing. And then, of course, it works out the door wasn't locked anywhere, which I absolutely love. Absolutely love.
Yes.
It's that so the Doctor all the way through that. Yeah. Sorry, Reese.
Stephen Moffat. Yeah, I stuffed that up. Stephen Moffat said that he left a birthday message on video to Doctor Who, and he said that when he started writing, he was writing sitcoms, but Doctor Who taught him how to write drama, and I just thought that was him going back to his old sitcom days.
Yeah.
Ah, yes.
So funny and absolutely brilliant. Yep.
How did Queen Elizabeth find out from the Zygons all of their plans?
By earwigging, no doubt. And obviously, if she's pretending that she's a Zygon herself, although they're obviously a bit thick because she didn't change back into one, but they are. Does it matter?
No.
Right then. The other thing I didn't pick up.
Nope.
Sorry. Carry on.
His little pedantic heart can't stand having a little piece of information. No.
Matthew, we're going to say something.
Yeah. Did anybody notice what the Matt Smith, the 11th Doctor, ends up carving that series of numbers?
Yes.
Yeah. The date.
But only because it was in the article that you posted the link to earlier.
I noticed.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I put it as my cover picture on Facebook now. It says 1716 23/11/63.
Thank you for that. Right then.
Which is the date and time the first episode.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Yes. Right. Now
I've got a bit of a story to tell about my reaction to the scene where the two doctors met, the 10th and the 11th.
Yes.
At drama school this year, we've had a new director and drama teacher, but last year, the man who was there previously, he was a huge Doctor Who fan, and he got one of the other students interested in it, but me coming along and being so addicted to it, three of them have started watching, and they watched all of New Who before they saw this.
Good.
But one of them went to the cinema with me, dressed as the 10th Doctor, and we reenacted the scene with the sonic screwdrivers afterwards.
Brilliant.
So he said to me, compensating for something, and I said, what? And, you know, we reenacted that little scene, which is a lot of fun.
Yes, it would have been. Anyway, back to the thing. Well, the thing I didn't pick up on first time I watched it was the memory erasing system that they had at the gallery. Well, sorry, is it unit, not the gallery, beg your pardon. I didn't pick up on that first time, which that was quite an important part of the plot, actually. So I don't know why I didn't pick
Black
up
archive.
On it. So I watched it quite quite intensely.
What is how long that would take, Kirby?
What to get this? Yeah, thanks.
To correct you.
And of course, when Kate turns into a Zygon, I think that scared Isabella. She sort of like hid her face. But again, that was really, really well done. We've got to have something like that in Doctor Who.
I think that the whole business of the Zygons getting the picture sent to the phone and then revealing themselves was just a nod to the fact that happened so many times, that the baddie reveals themselves while giving something away. I didn't have any problems with that. Now, previously to that, when Osgood saves herself with a scarf, I also think that was a deliberate nod to...
Yeah,
well, besides the fact that it was deliberate nod to Tom Baker doing it, I think that the character of Osgood probably had researched the Fourth Doctor, and that's why she had a scarf like his.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Of course, we have to the 10th Doctor has to fulfill his promise to marry the Queen, which was quite done. Well, not very many people watching.
Does this keep happening? It starts to happen, yes.
You would have thought that would have been in some sort of cathedral somewhere, not out on the lawns of the thing. Obviously, legally,
well, it didn't make it in history, so we know it was secret.
Okay, fair enough. So I love the scene when all the doctors enter the 10th Doctor's TARDIS, and then it glitches, and we see that those wonderful roundels.
Hey, look, round things.
Yes.
What are the round things? I have no idea.
I also love the fact that it's half and half between Tennant's and the classic one. And when the Hurt was in his own TARDIS, it was like that then as well. So loved it. Loved that bit. What else was really good about it? There was a bit of timey-wiminess I quite liked as well with the phone call, which we saw earlier on in the episode. And they revisited it.
You knew that phone call was going to come up later.
And of course, we have a countdown, which is a classic Doctor Who thing, isn't it? Having the countdown to an explosion.
Yes.
Which, again,
it's
that was.
The final
The when it stopped at the end, there was a funny line, wasn't it? When the doctors turned up and made them think that did not know that they were either human or Zygon, so that they both sort of cancelled the countdown. Yeah. There was a funny line after that I forget.
Yeah.
Now in the article that Matthew posted to all over the place about various Easter eggs in this episode, River's shoes are. Yes. In the Black Archive.
Weapons of mass destruction.
And Amy's pinwheel. Yeah. Is there too.
Yeah, was that the seat from A Christmas Carol that Hurt was sitting in?
Probably, yes. I wouldn't be surprised.
But did anybody else find the slow motion thing of them coming out of the painting to just be kind of ridiculous?
No, I loved it.
No, it was perfect. I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also what I did love is when
That actually got laughs at the screening I was at. And it was just kind of like, I'm glad to know I'm not the only one who thought it was ridiculous.
In my screening, they didn't laugh at my screening about that.
No, it was great.
It just seemed over the top.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
Ben didn't moan about it.
And I gave Ben the opportunity to pick holes in this. He didn't moan about it. So it must have been good. Right, so the other thing I liked, of course, was Clara looking around all the photos of previous companions, etc., on the wall, which was lovely. Mm. And then she has a very deep conversation with Hurt's doctor. Again, brilliant. Lovely scene, that.
Yes. I think she did a lot better in this episode than she has recently, to be honest.
No, I think she's been right. Yeah. And then the big red button appears on the big bomb, which is lovely.
I love a big red button.
And of course, then that leads on to, because he's just about to press a button, he's made his decision, and then the other doctors turn up to support him. It's just wonderful.
How many people thought that they were that was actually going to happen, that they were all going to do it?
I was convinced.
I was actually under the impression that they were
I wasn't convinced.
I was convinced. I was certain that they were fixing to push the button.
No, I wasn't. I thought something's going to happen because we still had another few minutes to go. And I thought, because where Clara was crying, I thought, well, they've done this really well. Something's going to happen in a minute to stop them.
I wasn't paying attention to the time. Mm. I got so totally sucked into it.
That
was the way I was. And it just seemed, because the whole thing to a certain extent is about him. The Hurt doctor, the war doctor, kind of getting to a certain extent some redemption for what he's about to do. So
becoming the doctor,
to becoming the doctor. Mm. And it made sense with their dialogue and whatnot, and the two of them showing up, the two of them putting their hands on the button with him as well. Yeah. And it sort of made sense to me. They'll push the button and this will, you know,
so,
this will.
So he can forgive himself.
I loved how they got out of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Brilliant. And I loved that Tennant said the words that...
how they got out of it. What are you saying? You loved how they got out of it. How did they get out of it?
The solution to... So.
Yeah.
Oh, and I see, and that's what totally turned me off. Totally.
Why?
Oh.
Why, Mary? Just let Mary speak.
Oh, yeah. Because I think it's a facile solution. It's like, whoo, let's turn Doctor Who back into, you know, the wonderful magical creature, you know, that we... originally thought he might be. We've taken his gravitas away. We've taken away that darkness, that thing that he's always reacting to from the Eccleston generation.
No, you haven't, yeah. Mary, because it did. They're all going to forget it. So
they've
all forgotten that that's happened. So basically, all that has happened is Gallifrey still exists somewhere.
Russell T. Davies. I want the Time War. I want the Time War, I want his.
Yeah, but the Time War still happened.
Result of it.
The Time War still happened. Yeah.
Yeah, the Time War happened. Yeah. John Hurt has that wonderful line in that first scene with Billy Piper's moment about, if you can see into my mind, you can see everything I've seen, all the suffering, and along those lines. He still is carrying all that around with him. And
he did not kill the Time Lords.
Yeah, but he doesn't know that he didn't. He doesn't know that he didn't. Yeah. He still believes he did.
Yeah. And now the Doctor is going to go happily back and revisit. He's going to find Gallifrey.
He may stumble across it. But whether he finds
it. That's what was stated at the end. You know, now I have a new purpose, a new goal.
That's fine. But
I think it's much better to have a happy Doctor than a...
It's only the current Doctor that has that in his mind. All the other Doctors, the 10th, 9th, and 8th, for that matter, will forget it. They'll still believe that they destroyed the Time Lords, but, yeah, but the current Doctor
the Great Doctor again turning everything around that Russell Davies laid out.
No, I'm quite pleased. I quite like the idea of having the Time Lords back.
Why didn't we complain about RTD setting up the Time War? It's just adding another level.
Yeah,
to
we
it.
Did. Yeah,
I think the Time War was an amazing thing, and I want for Day of the Doctor. I wanted to see the Time War. I wanted to see what the Doctor did.
But we did see it.
We did. No, we saw the Time War.
This is what he did.
They stopped it. They stopped it. Well, they encapsulated.
No.
Can I jump in for a second?
Yes, you can, Matthew.
Sure.
I will say that by Russell T. Davies' own admission, he messed up his own vision of the Time War by making the decision with End of Time to do what he did with the Time Lords in that, which I think by his own admission to a certain extent in Writer's Tale was him trying to put a capstone on it. And frankly, the reactions to the way the Time Lords were portrayed in End of Time, where I'm quoting from a review I've read where he basically turned them into over-glorified suicide bombers, did not go down very well. And that certainly, you know, I think still bugs people to this day. I think as well that people have gotten sick of the kind of the dark, this whole, you know, the Time War, oh, I'm the last of the Time Lords business that's been going on since then. Mm-hmm. It was great in 2005. It was great for the first couple of years when you didn't.
It was needed.
Yeah. It was needed because you needed to clear the slate. You needed to clear the backstory. You needed to make it mysterious.
Yeah, and also what they've done is they've haven't wiped out the history. The Time War still happened. But all they've done, they've come up with a solution. Because the Matt Smith Doctor's 400 years older. He's right. He's had time to consider, time to think what he could have done to save it. And he's thought of something in that time.
It still looks like what happened.
Yeah.
Because the Daleks pulled a Weeping Angels.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I
don't buy it. I just don't. Because the end of that just was the Matt Smith Doctor being so full of energy now to, oh boy, now I get to go in search of Gallifrey. So that tells me that it's still there.
But it's nice. Basically, the old Time War story is an arc which has been going on since the new series began, which is a very long arc, really. And it's nice to put it behind us. But
as time has passed and they've gotten more distance from it, the Doctor, you know, he's grown, he's developed beyond the anger that the Eccleston Doctor had. The tremendous black sadness that he had.
He's buried it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
We saw a bit of it in The Snowman.
I want that still a part of the Doctor. I don't want it resolved.
It will be.
Well, you cruel woman.
Well, that was never part.
I think the Doctor has a lot of things in his.
I like flawed heroes.
He has a lot of skeletons in his closet. Not least. If you kick the Time War out of it, he's had companions die. He's had loads. He's had to see some terrible things, including the Time War, which he's obviously managed to get out of. But he still saw that happen. He still experienced it, and it still leaves something in his psyche.
Still a lot of death and suffering, wasn't there?
And it's still he is still the dark, unpredictable alien. Which is what I respect about him. But I feel like that's being taken away.
Mary, think of the billions of children.
He was also
killed.
He's still also responsible for lots of deaths just through being somewhere, just turning up and things happen. So he has to live with that.
The line
as well.
From John Hurt in this was that Gallifrey will disappear and it will appear that the Time Lords and the Daleks destroyed, you know, it would appear what we thought happened in the RTD era happened, but they really know, or the 11th Doctor really knows, that they saved it. And they'll feel better about it, but the rest of the universe can carry on thinking that the Time War ended by them destroying
and
themselves.
And nobody knows where it is. So technically, the Time Lords are still dead until they're found. Yeah. So the
same thing still happened. It still locked itself away.
And also, we knew that something had happened, that something weird had happened anyway, because of the fact that they were there in the End of Time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway,
can I also can I quickly
back as well?
Yeah. Can I put something?
They have.
Can I put forward a theory I've read online, and I'll put this to Mary and see her thoughts on it. One of the theories I've read online is that based on some of the evidence that we've collected so far, is that what we are seeing in this, what we're seeing in Day of the Doctor is a rewriting of history. That what we think actually happened, him destroying the people, using the moment and whatnot, did actually occur in the original timeline. But in the case of this, the moment there's been a manipulation of the timelines, allowing the 10th and 11th Doctor to come back and rewrite the events. So,
right. I mean, they even say that in the episode, you know, well, that would change history. Well, we do it all the time, you know. So.
That's right.
Yeah. So that the Hurt Doctor, the War Doctor, did in the original timeline push the button. He did destroy everything.
Yeah.
And something. Go ahead, Reese.
Oh, no, it's moving back to something about the end of time. But what with Gallifrey returning now, guess who else might return?
The Master.
Rassilon?
Yes.
Hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, moving on.
I just know that when they were going through that whole happy ending, all I could do was sit there shaking my head going, no, don't take the time more away
God,
from me.
Oh, Mary, I was celebrating. Yeah. I was cheering.
Yeah. Go on, Robert. Let Robert speak. Robert.
I was just saying, as a fan of the old series, I didn't like it that Gallifrey was actually destroyed when the new series came back. So
Nor did I. I did hope they'd bring it back one day, and they've done so, hopefully, one day in the future.
What I liked about that was that it explained that something still happened in the meantime.
Yes.
But now we've got even more of an explanation. We've got another Doctor having adventures in that time.
Which is good. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
At the door. Where do we get up to? Right. Something, yeah. So they obviously, like you say, that I loved Hurt's reaction when he realizes what the 11th Doctor's, what now 12th Doctor's plan was to encapsulate everything in some sort of time bubble, and his reaction was like a child really, and he did that.
So
I've never seen Hurt act like that before. You know, act in that gleeful, jumping around sort of way, and then we see that dreamy scene of all the Doctors.
Technically, there's 13 of them.
Yes, all right. A dreamy scene of all the Doctors in their little screens and the little shot of the Capaldi Doctor, his eyes.
He looked a little bit evil in that one. In the audience, when I saw it with an audience, more than half the audience had not seen it yet, which was kind of cool. They'd been waiting. And the cheer that went up.
Yeah,
and also
a big cheer.
When I was watching with the two of my girls who watched early in the day.
It was shocking, wasn't it, Robert?
Julia and I recognized Capaldi, and Mary kind of looked at us and went, "What?" she'd recognize him.
I'm glad that
I was wondering if that's what I'd seen it happen. Yeah.
Like we said, right, back to the story. Then we had the sort of traditional multi-doctor goodbye story with three TARDISes part next door to each other, and then we see John Hurt saying goodbye, go into the TARDIS and says his old body's wearing a bit thin, and then he starts to regenerate. But unfortunately, we didn't say a complete transformance.
Yeah.
There is I believe it's on that Easter egg thing that Matthew put out there. There's a GIF showing that you may have a little bit of...
Yeah, there's a bit in his eyes. There's a bit of...
Can I just say something?
You can.
Because I posted on the 20 megabyte page for Mary. Somebody's taken a freeze shot of it, so you can actually clearly see as well.
I did see it. It doesn't look enough like Eccleston, but yeah.
I think what the John Hurt Doctor, the War Doctor, whatever we're going to call him, says just before he regenerates, I hope the ears are a bit less conspicuous this time.
Yeah.
Makes that... We know that he's going to become Eccleston.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. That got a big laugh at the screening of
it. Did. Also, we see that when all the Doctors are lined up in that sort of slightly dreamy shot we see just before.
Go ahead. You finish your statement, and then I have something different.
Well, we say we have a lot of the dreamy shot, don't we, of the Doctor stepping out with all his other incarnations, looking out into space, and we see the Hurt Doctor there standing next to the Eccleston Doctor. Yes, carry on, Kirby.
With the scene of the three TARDISes standing together, it occurred to me that fascinating the chameleon circuit, although it's broken, it can make such minor modifications to the police box with the size, the windows, the blueness, different lights.
Yeah, but they did a really good job, didn't they, with those slightly different TARDISes. I thought that was really brilliant.
Yes.
But that, of course, then everybody says goodbye, including the 10th Doctor, I don't want to go, just for a laugh. Yes. Which
that
is
was
really
much
fun.
Better, Sid.
Yeah. I love that.
He always says that.
Yeah. But then, of course, what do we get? We get the curator. Now, when he started walking, and you just saw the back of his head, I said, it's not Tom, is it? And, of course, when it was, the reaction in that auditorium was unbelievable. amazing.
Beautiful.
And the scene itself played beautifully. Was totally right. And even Ben loved it. So what do we think of the Tom Baker cameo?
Oh, my God.
It was wonderful. I think that was my favorite part of the whole thing was his appearance.
Oh, everyone has gone quiet. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Are they all still there?
I'm here.
That's all right.
I'm here. Oh, Robert's dropped out.
Has he?
Yeah, Robert's dropped out.
What do you do that for?
Don't know.
Carry on.
I think it was wonderful that he didn't appear as an old doctor, but he could be the old doctor. Being the oldest doctor alive makes him the curator, and it sounds like it's something that could pass on, you know, once he's gone to the next oldest doctor.
I've seen theories that it's similar to Romana's being able to change her appearance, that the doctor just... And they kind of reference this in the dialogue, that the doctor just went back to an old face that he liked retired.
That's what Deb got from it as well. That's exactly what they did.
That makes a lot more sense. That was good.
Magnificent. Yeah. Go on then, Matthew. I know you're itching to say something.
Well, I remember I loved it the first time I watched it, and I thought it was absolutely lovely, and then my mind went, oh, God, how did – what? But – you know, and the whole continuity thing, and then I eventually, I think on the second and third viewing, went, I don't care.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, that's where you have to go.
But I think I've seen the theory that Kirby just mentioned, the idea that he simply just goes back to an older face in a later regeneration, and I think that may be part of the reason why Gallifrey's getting brought back is, even without John Hurt's War Doctor coming into it and confusing this whole regeneration numbering situation, we were getting close to that to the limit set back in 1976 when clearly they were on the fourth Doctor and nobody probably ever thought the show would last to reach Doctor number 12 or 13. So
there was a quite important thing part of the dialogue when they said about all the weapons that the forbidden weapons that they had in the store. And of course they were resurrecting dead Time Lords in the shape of Rassilon and the Master anyway, somewhere in the history. Now I would have thought the desperation of being part of the Time War that they would abolish the regeneration limit anyway.
Moffat in the last couple of days has already said we still have the 13 live situation and it is there and it's going to be part of the story.
Ooh.
Yeah, because
he's just setting up something else to take apart. That's all.
Yes.
Well, I think he is as well from the way he's going because he's
but if
now.
If you listen, sorry to interrupt, but if you listen to episode 195 of the 20 Megabyte .2 podcast, which features Stephen Moffat. He will. There is a sort of an explanation to what he says in that speech, and lots of what he says actually. So listen to the last episode of this show.
I think isn't that the same thing that Matthew and I are referring to?
Well, in regards to him, he lies. He must lie to save the sort of fate. Well, save the spoilerness of the show. He lies deliberately, and he will always do so. And I'm right behind him. So if he says, you mean you're not?
Go ahead. No, I agree that he lies, but what I think is that he really is going to address the situation and that number of lives situation still does exist. We've seen that the Master can go past it, and it's going to just be part of the plot that that Gallifrey is going to fix it.
Okay. Yeah, because Moffat lies, but at the moment he's saying in an interview I just read just before we started recording, talking about, you know, that the War Doctor doesn't count. Yeah, that the War Doctor, Hurt's Doctor, counts as a regeneration, and he's also counting the Tenant 10.5 Handy Doctor as a regeneration as well. So that, you know, that even, this is once again, it's like unit dating. One production team says one thing and the next production thing thinks something else.
Exactly.
Which there's a wonderful line about that in this as well.
To that too?
Yes. When, Kate's calling Malcolm up is like, I need you to dig out one of my father's files, codenamed Cromer. It'd be dated either 70s or 80s, depending on the date.
I love that. Yes.
There's loads of little touches like that though. Yeah. The only thing we haven't mentioned so far is, hang on, I just got to ask what time I want dinner. 12-ish? Half past 12, whatever. The only thing we haven't mentioned is the beautiful end title sequence with all the doctors on it.
Is anyone playing it back in the background right now?
No.
Sorry.
No.
Yeah, sorry.
No.
Why? Because I want to know if it's a problem with my recording or if this was actually on this actually happened when the doctor walks out and joins that lineup of doctors, my dialogue keeps going, but the entire screen goes bluish gray, foggy for a long period, longer than I would.
I heard some people had trouble with that.
No, I didn't get that.
So it must have been a dodgy recording or
like I say,
signal sent out.
What I did get after it when I watched it at home was a little tiny preview of Silence Will Fall, Christmas special thingamajig. Which
no, this was during the recording.
I'm moving on now. With pictures of Weeping Angels and then the preview of some rubbishy Sherlock bloody series that's coming back. Nothing to do with Doctor Who.
Stop.
Yeah, that's right. We don't need to really say what we thought, because obviously we all loved it, apart from Mary. We all loved
it.
Including Bess.
I loved it.
Mary, you're becoming the new Ben.
I loved the show itself. I just don't like where it took us.
You don't like the fact that Time War's been cancelled.
You have to stop watching.
It hasn't, though. Like we said, it's still there. Anyway, moving on, because I've got very little time left and we've got to move on to a little bit of feedback. Otherwise, the people who sent in the feedback might get a bit upset. But to sum up, I think we all agree this was an amazing, and it lived up to expectations for once, didn't it? So fantastic stuff.
Yes.
And
I think we got just enough. If we had any more in terms of doctors or references, it might have felt a little bit like it was pandering to fans, but it had a story to it.
It did.
It felt fun.
It pandered a lot to fans.
Well done,
Stephen Moffat, for all the wonderful throwaway lines.
I don't think it was pandering, though. I think pandering would have been including all the previous doctors, which clearly would have been nice, but it would have also felt like, look, you wanted this to happen, so it's happening. It felt like the references fit in with the story.
Yeah, what I'm saying is I just hope that it was... Yeah. We had loads of people who are not Doctor Who fans watching this because of what it was, and I'm hoping we've managed to rope in a few new fans or a few people that might come back to watch the show that we lost, because it was well over 10 million overnight viewers for this one.
That was just in the UK.
I know, exactly. Simulcast... Yeah. Ratings as well. So I'm just hoping that all around the world, people, curiosity-wise, came to watch this and realised they've been missing something for the last few years since David Tennant left, or they'll just come along and say, oh, David Tennant's in it. They should have kept him, that sort of thing. But anyway, let's see if we can get some feedback. Right. Got this one from Alex.
Play that buggy feed.
It says, according to this, is Alex Purcell, but he calls himself Alex because I don't know if he wants his surname mentioned. Oh dear, I just did it. It says, hey guys, it's Alex. I've finished watching the 50th anniversary for the third time in one day, and I thought I might send in a bit of feedback. Well, thank you. Keep on doing that. I loved the original title sequence at the start. I love the characters of Kate and Osgood. Speaking of her, I have a theory that she is the daughter of Sergeant Osgood, who was in the Demons. Think about it. She's part of UNIT, and she is a good friend of Kate, who is the Briggs daughter.
Hello.
Hello, Robert. Sorry, we were just been talking
Where
about
have you been?
You. Oh, I don't know.
Robert should give his final.
Yeah, well, let's do this, finish the email, then Robert can do his final theory. Not theory, view on it.
Right. What's the theory?
Never mind. It was the Briggs daughter, and the Brig worked with Sergeant Osgood, so he would have seen the Fourth Doctor's scarf, which she was wearing. Speaking of the Fourth Doctor, who went, oh my God, that should be a question. I think he's written it down like this. Speaking of the Fourth Doctor who went, so there's no punctuation, so it looks like the Fourth Doctor who. What he's actually saying is, speaking of the Fourth Doctor who went, oh my God, when Tom Baker came on at the end. I certainly did.
Everybody.
Love the John Hurt Doctor regenerating and seeing a quick glimpse of the half-formed Christopher Eccleston. Also, one thing I think no one was expecting to see was Peter Capaldi being one of the Doctors who moved Gallifrey. I'm also looking forward to Adventures in Space and Time, which is airing tonight, 24th. So I'd better finish up now. So I will say keep up the great podcast guys and bye. Thank you so much, Alex. Keep on writing in. That's all I can say. Robert, very quickly, what did you think of the 50th anniversary special of Doctor Who? Oh, is he gone again? Bye, Robert. Moving on, let's put some more feedback. Oh, God's sake. Poor old Robert. Right, they've got some audio feedback here. Let's see if this works. If I can get it to play. What's going on? Oh, here we go.
Well, good afternoon, 20 megabytes. It's 3:49 p.m. and it's Sunday afternoon. I'm sitting here, I've got a nice glass of Morgan State Sauvignon. So,
surprise.
That'll help wet my whistle. And I want to talk about a couple of things. The first one is the Doctor Who event that we went to at the XL on Friday. Adam, no, that was not me trying to avoid you. It's simply I didn't have a ticket. A friend of mine came up with a ticket at very short notice for the Friday, so I went along with him. I don't know what you thought about it. I mean, it's a great event for people who like to queue a lot, isn't it?
Yes, it was.
Because everywhere you went, there was blooming
not
queue.
Not like to queue a lot, but there was a lot of queuing involved.
Spent so much time with feet. By the time I got home and had dinner, I was going to sit in front and watch the cricket, and I don't even remember the start of it because I fell asleep and Dawn had to wake me up and put me to bed because I was tired. What did we see? We saw the FX panel first thing in the morning. I was a nice warrior, so I got the first panel. Mm-hmm. That was quite interesting, that was. It's Danny Hargreaves talking about the way he does things, blowing a few things up.
That's right.
Got to Sideman, then he blew up a Dalek. So it's quite entertaining, that was. But apparently that panel was actually a disaster behind the scenes. Actually, no, people like Ed Stradling and Paul Vanese who are running it. And they did say they had real problems with that panel.
Yeah, we got it right the day I watched it.
The other two panels we saw were the panel with the 5th, 6th and 7th Doctors. And they're all good forms. They all do spark off each other very well. And they all clearly enjoy the show, have a lot of good stories to tell about it. Peter Davison, I remember, was a bit grumpy years ago, but I think now he really enjoys it. And, of course, Colin Baker is very much for it. And Sylvester McCoy, of course, is as mad as a box of frogs. But that was good. And the final panel we had was Matt Smith, the utterly cute Jenna-Louise Coleman, or Jenna Coleman, depending on what we call her, Stephen Moffat, and Marcus Wilson, who I didn't know was leaving the show. That was new. I actually told a few other people about it, and that had come as a complete surprise. Aww. I don't know if anyone knew that. So where the show's going to go when he leaves, who knows? But although I enjoyed those panels, the thing I didn't enjoy was I think there was either too many people or not enough space, because you really were. When you're trying to do things, walk around the rest of the show, there were just so many people there, it was absolutely packed.
Yeah.
You're trying to get to the retail area, and it's virtually impossible to get round.
Exactly.
Simply too many people there. I think either they'd sold more tickets than they thought they'd sold, or they just hadn't got the space they'd sold. So you pay £50, did you get value for money? I thought I did. My mate Dave and his mate Dermot weren't so convinced. I think they found the queuing and the sheer crush of people to be too much. But there were some nice touches, and we saw the panel with Matt Irvin and Mike Tucker, who I can remember doing the SX many, many years ago, and having great fun at Panopticon with blowing things up and in a mad stupor on a Saturday evening when they were doing the cabarets. And they gave a nice little panel. Disappointed Miss Bird and Cribbins. I think that's the one problem. That's something that you said today, Adam, that the way that some of the panel was for either Ice Warriors or Weeping Angels were scheduled, it actually meant you actually missed some of the other panellists. So I think they could have organised that a bit better.
It could have been a 2 or 3 day event.
But overall,
it
was an enjoyable day. It's the first con I've done since Panopticon 2003. Actually, the first panel I've actually attended as an attendee since probably, blimey, actually, the last time I actually went. It must have been the 90s the last time I actually went as an attendee rather than going as someone working behind the scenes. So, all in all, it was okay. Could have done better. It'd be interesting to see, Adam, what your view on it is today, and how much fun, if ever you enjoyed it, not yesterday, whether I saw your picture of that queuing and things like that, and what you thought about that, and I hope that Isabella was able to cope with it. I saw your post about being sick the night before and things like that, so I hope that didn't spoil everyone's day. So there you go. And anyway, so we move on to last night. Now, I went to a party at my mate Dave's place, one of the guys I went with, to celebrate the Who, obviously. Went in fancy dress. I went as the Master, so I got my black shirt, black jacket, and all that sort of stuff there. Dawn went to sort of cross between John Pertwee and Tom Baker. She got a red rather, velvet jacket, and she got a Tom Baker scarf that I'd acquired from somewhere. So she went as that, and there were several of the Doctors. Two Weeping Angels, one very good Weeping Angel there. I'm trying to post some posts on Facebook, but it keeps telling me there's a script that's running really slowly, it doesn't want to have pictures, which is really annoying. So I'm definitely trying to do that, to get those up there as well. But the episode itself, now, what do you say about the episode itself? It was good, wasn't it? I mean, I think there's a lot there for everybody. Yes. There was humorous moments, there was serious moments. It did tie up a lot of loose ends, so you understood where the War Doctor came from. You know, what he was actually doing, what he was trying to do, does actually now make sense. Hang on a minute, I've just got to do something. Now, when he was with Elizabeth doing the picnic, and you had a sudden, unexpected view straight down of her... Should we say call it decolletage? There was some of the loud, drummy accents in our room. Said, "Oh, blimey!" I can't possibly think who that might have been. But that was a good bit of humorous moment with him running around and actually being married to the Queen. So there you go. That's one we didn't see coming. The actual reading of the Doctors with 10 not recognising 11. There wasn't that instantaneous recognition that you had with the two Doctors in the Three Doctors, if that makes sense to you, where they instantaneously knew who each other was. You also had the comeback of Leslie Stewart with the daughter and what she wanted to do. Now, I thought the way you had the Zygon versions, the human versions, you thought that was set up because with the, we have the memory wipe, he greets me, he's been here 10 years, he doesn't remember me. And that was just a throwaway. And then, of course, it came back with the David Tennant saying, right, I'm wiping up his memories, you're going to get us to negotiate. I thought it was a really clever touch, that was, and it's a totally unexpected way of seeing it. Billy Piper. Now, nobody saw the house. That's how they used Billy Piper, did they? My God, she's got really funny lips, though, these days, hasn't she? I mean, I think
yes,
she's had...
she has.
Was it Botox or collagen or something in there? But, by God, they are... I think they look like Mick Jagger's lips these days, don't they? But, again, that was... Nobody could predict that was where that came from. So, I think a lot of the stories we saw were just garbage and people didn't see what's coming. The way John Hurt worked, though, was excellent because you saw what a traumatised character he was, what he had to do and why he had to do it. And of course, what we've had now is you've got the big red reset button has been hit, so the Time Lords are back. You've got a Doctor who wasn't a Doctor who could have been a Doctor. And I guess fans will argue for years, you know, until the 100th anniversary about, you know, okay, which Doctor was he? Does he actually count as one of the numerical Doctors? Because he was the War Doctor, does that mean he wasn't the Doctor? Because the Doctor takes a name, he took the name of the War Doctor. You know, we could argue about this till Kingdom Come, couldn't we? And the thing about the pictures and putting them together with the Gallifrey Falls No More. So, yeah, it's a big red reset button, but it's done in a very clever way. And it has brought the Time Lords back. So we can now see them working out how they're going to reincarnate when Capaldi's successor goes. How are we going to get through to the 15th incarnation of the Doctor and how that's going to work? That'd be interesting. And, of course, Peter Capaldi. There he was. You know, coming in with his TARDIS, the 13 of them, and then at the end, it's... Blimey, who is that? No, it's not. Yeah, it is. It is. And there's about 20 of us in the room, and there was a sudden silence when that came on, and we were working out exactly what it meant. Silence. And we've seen a regeneration as well. So the only regeneration we've never seen, of course, is Troughton into Pertwee. But we saw the regeneration of McGann into the War Doctor, in Night of the Doctor, and now in Day of the Doctor... We've tied at that loose end as well, so we actually have seen him regenerate. And so, in a way, we have seen the Ninth Doctor in this. So, I think, very well-scripted episode. And I'm amazed, actually, managed to keep a lot of these things quiet, and the spoilers didn't come out, and people didn't see what was coming, which made it just an absolute pleasure. And I think this is going to go down as probably the best anniversary episode ever. You think
Absolutely.
We've had 10, 20,
yes.
25,
yeah.
So... not much competition there, really, is there? But I definitely think this is the best one ever. I also want to talk about the thing on Thursday night, the Adventure in Time and Space. Forgot about that, didn't I? Yeah, I sat
Space
and watched
and
that.
Time.
I thought that was really good as well. It's some of the characters, the actors playing the real characters were excellent. I mean, Carol Ann Ford replacement was just wonderful. And I thought David Bradley did a very good impression of Bill Hartnell. It wasn't an impersonation. It wasn't like Richard Herndon was trying to be him, but it was an impression, and you got him. And
yes.
Seeing the things behind the scenes of how it works and looking how Sidney Newman came so close to acting it, and he went out on a limb to let Verity Lambert and Wallace Sussain remake it, redo it. I thought it was very clever. And, of course, what you saw is the absolute tragedy, the way that Bill Hartnell did go, you know, with his memory going and physically falling apart. he's only 67 when he died, which is cool. You know, it's not that old, is it? You know, 67. No, it's not. I mean, that's, well, for Adam and me, that's not that far away, is it? You know, it's, but I thought, again, that that was an absolute delightful tribute to a programme showing how it's put together. And you can see behind the scenes, you saw the inherent racism and sexism you get. I mean, we are talking about 1960s England, you know, sadly not as liberal thinking as we are now. So that really did come forth. I've got a feeling I've heard someone that Wallace Stane was gay. I'm not trying to make any of that. I don't know if that's true or not, but that didn't come out in the come out, it's probably an unfortunate choice of it. That wasn't shown, I'm doing hand gestures again. That wasn't shown in the story itself. I think they were using the fact that, you know, people ignored him, took advantage of him, took liberties with him because of his race, which of course, you know, we all know is completely wrong. And it just shows how he battled back and fought it back and do it with Liberty Lambert, who had, of course, the inherent sexism was there. So the two of them turned up and started off what this great success story was. So, some great touches, like the bit about the Daleks going across Westminster Bridge and, you know, I'm desperate for pay, you know, you don't know what it's like in here. I think there really were some nice touches. So overall, this whole weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, it's been an absolute joy. It really has. It's been a celebration of Doctor Who. Oh, and by the way, we won the quiz as well at my mate Dave's party, and we won the gold TARDIS. So
well, well done.
So, anyway, folks, hope you enjoyed it as well, and seeing you.
Thank you. That was Jeff.
Yes,
no,
thank
you. Andy. Sorry, Jeff's next. As Andy Nunning. Jeff's next. Okay. Jeff Waddle, who says, Saturday night, build up for a week, football in the afternoon, lots of alcohol consumed, Doctor Who on, mouth open, in awe of what I was watching. I absolutely hated it. Not Nightmare and Silver hate, just complete disappointment in what I saw. Sunday night, couldn't believe what I was seeing online. The love of the episode. Took a step back, watched again. Completely different view. It was good. I'd go as far as to say it was pretty good. Yes. You can drive a lorry through the plot holes, as you can almost every story. There's things I would have changed. I'd have taken Hurt out. And that's nothing against his performance, and replaced him with McGann. That's a good idea. I wouldn't go against that. I think that would have been the ideal scenario, to be honest with you. But Hurt was fantastic. Yes. I generally don't like this other Doctor business. I don't believe that while there is a Zygon war being prepared for, the three Doctors take time out for Tennant to get married, and the forced discussion between the Zygons and the humans is straight out of Cold Blood, which was a shambles. Matthew can no doubt tell you where a lot of the ideas came from in Big Finish. I can see where every idea came from in the book range, some of which go beyond plagiarism. But so what? It worked, kind of. Not brilliant, but not as bad as first seen. P.S. Ian and Barbara must have been lazy as hell to follow Susan in a car when they could have just looked out of their classroom window. Thank you, Jeff.
Different. I mentioned that.
Now, good thing about that bit, the good thing about that particular email is it had a bit of an unexpected twist in it, didn't it? Because you lot were all
yes. Thank you,
Can I pick up on something he said in there about he would have taken? Well, actually, not going to pick up on the whole plagiarism because he kind of has some fair points in a couple of places, but. The thing I want to pick up on is him talking about he would have taken Hurt out and put McGann in. And I've been, since watching it the first time, and particularly at the cinema screening last, as I mentioned, they had a little behind-the-scenes thing. And Moffat very briefly talks about the fact that he had to do a lot of rewriting to the script at the last minute. And John Hurt talks about the fact that he had to turn around in like 4 days' notice to come in and play it. My own theory, and I've been seeing this picked up as well, if you go back and you look at the announcements of things, when we found out when it was confirmed that Eccleston wasn't going to be in it, and we found out John Hurt was in it, that, and also if you think about the fact that the moment takes the form of Rose, that was supposed to be, the Time War Doctor was originally supposed to be Eccleston, yes. But the fact that Eccleston decided to pull out completely messed things up.
But can I just interrupt you there? Because otherwise I'll forget what I was going to say. Please hold that thought for a moment. But I just thought that the War Doctor goes in, regenerates, becomes Eccleston, has seen a vision of Billy Piper's Rose, and then next person he sees in his next little thing is Rose. So he sort of half knows what she looks like. So it's an interesting sort of full circle
thing.
Or
he went searching for her.
That too.
Yeah, anyway, sorry. I like that.
Carry on,
like
Matthew.
That. Moffat should consult with you.
He should.
Well, I was heading along those lines as well, and that Moffat does eventually make it work. But my feeling very much, is that Eccleston making the decision not to come back whatsoever threw a major kink in the works for all.
It did.
For the entire story and the entire script.
Yes.
But, you know, it could have... I understand his point. I really do. And yeah, it would
have
been
no
great
choice
to have
but to create the War Doctor, really, because of Eccleston.
Yeah, because I had this conversation with somebody the other day. I mean, Barry listens to Big Finish as well, and Robert, if he ever comes back, has started to as well. If you think about McGann's Doctor, both in the books, which Jeff and I have gotten into a bit on the Facebook group I sent a couple of weeks ago, I had a thing where I was feuding with everybody on there, it seemed like, because I was also feuding with Kirby over Silver Nemesis, and I was feuding with somebody else.
That wasn't a feud.
I was using. I made.
Okay. Get on with it.
Get on with it, because I've got one bit of email left to go, and everybody's going to be going in a minute.
And we need to go. Two of us at least.
Carry on.
That if you think about McGann's Doctor tends, when he gets dark, he gets introspective. He does not go out and start blowing things up. So you do it's hard to believe McGann's Doctor would go out and fight the Time War. You need a warrior, which is what John Hurt is, what Moffat has created.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But okay. Eccleston could have been it.
He could have been, I agree.
Exactly. But when Eccleston says, hey, I don't want to do it, you're stuck with a dilemma. You've got a big hole in the story you've got
Robert's
to fill.
Back.
Yay!
Right then. Sorry, can I move on to the next bit of feedback? This is the last bit.
Yes, I'm finished.
Thank you.
For now, anyways.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is in Kirk. The 20 Megabyte Podcast and Adam's book have been mentioned on the Staggering Stories podcast.
Hurrah.
Yes.
Yes.
Adventure in Space and Time. This was very good. There is a nice line where Hartnell says, they can't make Doctor Who without the Doctor.
That's right.
Another nice line, when the policeman tells Hartnell that he will have to move on, meaning his car, but it could apply to his career.
Yes.
It was nice that Hartnell had a vision of Smith as the latest Doctor.
Yes. Oh.
The show could have been scrapped in its first year. They would just have to send it back to Tosser's Lane. The Day of the Doctor. The 50th anniversary episode had an overnight UK audience figure of 10.2 million.
Good.
Beaten only by Strictly Come Dancing with 10.6.
Another great show.
It was also shown at more than 1,500 cinemas worldwide. It was shown on TV in 94 countries, dubbed or subtitled into 15 languages. In 1976, there was a film called Network. In 1976, there was a recession, and banks were going bust. A newsreader tells his viewers to open their windows and shout, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore. An executive goes to the back room and asks, are they yelling in Atlanta? I can imagine a BBC executive on Saturday asking, are they squeeing in Atlanta?
Yes, we were.
We're coming to the end of the Matt Smith era. The Doctor's regenerated before, and the world hasn't ended. Well, it has, but don't worry. The youngest Doctor seems to have seniority. Again. Don't give him that hurt look. We have an extra Doctor, never mentioned before, perhaps because Eccleston will not be in the anniversary episode.
Yeah.
As Robert Haynes said previously, the Doctors forget their multi-Doctor adventures when they are over. Where did Elizabeth get the painting Gallifrey Falls?
Good question.
If the 11th Doctor takes it back in time to her because he knows it is needed,
maybe,
then it is in a time loop.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose a future Doctor could get it from Gallifrey when the plant reappears.
Maybe.
The Fez is in a time loop. The Doctor finds it in our time, and it ends up in 1562, and waits 4 centuries for him. Does it never wear out?
Nope.
Clara's motorcycle is on its side stand, but does not fall over when they are staggering about.
Right.
The TARDIS is picked up soon after Clara enters. Would they really pick it up with a helicopter without assistance on the ground? Who would have seen Clara enter?
True.
An impossible astronaut, the Doctor faked his own death. Now he has faked the death of his entire planet.
Okay.
Good point.
We have conversation with a sentient bomb. Mike in Victory of the Daleks. Billy and Piper Darkstar. Did not have to play Rose Tyler. Lucky for her. On the BBC website, there is a making of the 50th anniversary. There is also the five-ish Doctor's reboot, a spoof by Peter Davison about the desperate attempts of the previous Doctor actors to get in the 50th anniversary. Davison promised a convention that if he was not in the anniversary episode, he would make his own.
A horse is a horse, of course, of course. And no one can talk to a horse, of course.
It is, of course, unless the horse is a shape-shifting alien. That's enough.
Thank you, Ian. But I say, maybe the Doctor got the idea for the, you know, the bringing back or faking the death of Gallifrey, but by his own death faking, perhaps. I don't know. But anyway, have you got time to listen to Robert's opinions of the Day of the Doctor before we go? He's gone anyway. Okay, so that's it then. Sorry, Robert, you're not here to experience the end of the show, but that's the end of the show. And next week, like I say, we'll be talking about Five-ish Doctors and Light
when,
at the End.
When are we going to be talking?
Apparently Sunday, but unless everybody disagrees.
Matthew and Mary going to be available?
Well, Matthew's trying to work that out.
Okay, well, we'll leave it as an open book for the time being then. We'll find out during
and
the week.
I've got to run Julia back to college, so but I could possibly.
That's a long way to run.
A morning would be better for me, but if people want to do it on Sunday, I can do it on Sunday. But aren't you guys going to be coming back from Chicago?
Yeah, I'll be driving back on Monday.
If we do it on Monday, she's going to be driving back. I'm going to be driving back.
What about Tuesday?
Tuesday, I don't know, possibly. I'll see what happens.
I think the idea was for us to try and do broadcast live, as it were, from the convention. So.
Oh, I see. Well, that would be cool. That would mean that we would do it a little earlier than usual.
Okay. I don't know. Matthew's got a schedule conflict that we have to work out.
I've got a panel at 2:00 and a possible certain other event right after that. So
okay, well, keep me posted. We'll leave it open-ended and let me know during the week.
And I would like to do it a little earlier in the day if possible.
That's what she said.
Make sure everyone knows.
Yes, okay. Anyway, back again next week with, I say, if you haven't listened to Light at the End of Big Finish production, please do so. It's well worth listening to.
I just burned it to disk.
We'll be looking at the Five-ish Doctors. Again, that's online at a BBC website if you want to have a look at that one. So until next week, thanks for listening to the show and welcome to new listeners. In fact, I must quickly welcome new members. We've got loads of people joining the 20 Megabyte Doctor
people.
Who podcast Facebook group. If I can find it on here. Where is it? Oh, there it is.
16. Wow.
If you have to slip away while I'm doing this. We have Ruth Summers, Kelly Tenney, Andrew Wilberforce, McCrimmon Lethbridge. Oh, I can't even. That's a long name. Kevin Burke.
Neil.
Jill Bradley, Mickey Sacamano, T. Real Shelton, Robert Mags Ford, Mark McHugh, Richard Green, Jason Rushworth, Shay McCourt, Erwin Harris, Austin Thomas Hayden. And I added Henry Mendoza, who sorted me out the ticket to go and see Colin Baker and meet him again. So thank you, Henry. And, of course, Megan Betty Byrne was added by Ben.
A note about Austin. Austin and his dad gave me my sonic screwdriver about 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, very nice of them.
Nice.
Did you put any cabinets together with it? That's basically what it's for, as John Hurt.
Yes.
What were you going to do? Line. Build a cabinet of them? Or? Anyway, thanks for listening to the show. See you again next week, and I hope that includes you, Reese. That'd be lovely. It was, but thanks for coming back this week. You've warmed my heart. See you later. Bye.
Aww.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
So long,
after all. Bye bye.
Better run.
Bye on behalf of Robert.
20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.